atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
Tonight, it's NBA All-Star Weekend, and Kanye West is using Russian assault vehicles to hand out shoes in Wicker Park. If today's wild day of stunts is any indication of what the weekend will be like, Chicago, it's going to be a circus. Rage Against the Machine announced they're reuniting and getting back on tour, but tickets are expensive. The fees, outrageous, not to mention the markup on the secondary market. But Rage wants to protect you from scalpers. And how are they planning to do that? Also, Rage isn't the only ones getting the band back together. Motley Crue and Poison this summer, getting back together. Which band would you like to see bury the hatchet and reunite? Good evening and welcome. I'm Justin Kaufman with you until 11 o'clock tonight on this Friday, Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2020. 312-981-7200, our phone lines, text line, open. We have so much to do tonight, not just the stories I just mentioned, but much, much more. In our Download on Chicago Business segment, we talk with a new Chicago business that is taking photography to a whole other level. Snap 36 is using 360-degree photography to help customers shop online. So long are the days of flat photos on Amazon or Walmart.com. Will it help consumers buy more stuff? It helped me. I can't tell you how many times I've bought a shirt just on the flat photo that's right in front of you on Amazon, and you get it home and then you look at the back and it has some drawing or something on the back. It says Thug Life. I didn't buy that. If I could have only seen the back of the shirt. That's where Snap 36 comes in, helping businesses adapt to the 21st century model for retail. And today was the coldest Valentine's Day in 77 years. Whew! So what are you doing tonight to stay warm? Hey-o! We want to hear your love stories later in the show. I'm a sucker for love stories. Love stories and how you met, you fell in love, and in some cases how it all fell apart. But that's a show for a different day. What's your love story? 312-981-7200. Phone lines are open. You got the mic. You can tell us how you fell in love. Tell us your special story. There's nothing better than someone telling about how they fell in love. It's one of the great things about having families is hearing, you know, your elders tell that story. 312-981-7200. But our big story tonight, let's start with this afternoon. The Trump administration announced it was deploying tactical units from the southern border to take part in an operation in so-called sanctuary cities across the country, including right here in Chicago. The New York Times called it an escalation in the president's battle against localities that refuse to participate in immigrant enforcement. I'm not sure I would categorize it that way. Sanctuary states and cities aren't necessarily sheltering undocumented immigrants. That's a broad statement. Instead, you and I both know that cities like Chicago are saying to the federal government that immigration is a federal law, and as a city, we don't have the resources to enforce it, meaning that Chicago police have a hard enough job as it is on the streets of Chicago. They're not also going to check for immigration status and hold prisoners beyond what the laws call for, just so immigration enforcement can have it easier and pick them up. You're not naive. You know that there's politics involved in this. As most big cities are run by Democrats, who are usually more lenient when it comes to immigration enforcement. I say usually because the last president was a Democrat, and he holds the record for the most deportations in American history, by far, not even close. But most of the time, it's Democrats. They're in charge of big cities and big populations. And if they use the police in these towns to, quote unquote, round up people, it would be akin to a police state. And undoubtedly put law-abiding U.S. citizens in harm's way, which usually happens when it's just ICE officials. So I know this seems contrary to popular opinion, but I do think it's okay that the president is bringing in more immigration officers to Chicago. I'm not sure that should be the SWAT team. I think that's just political theater. But I'm okay with the fact that the president is bringing in more immigration officers to Chicago. It's the federal government's prerogative to do that, to crack down on those living in the country illegally. And frankly, that's what local municipalities have been asking for all along. I don't think you need to dress this up, though. That's my problem with this story. On the other hand, this, of course, will put communities on edge in the Chicago area. And as a C-plus student of history, I would say anytime you start deploying a, quote, elite tactical special unit to rove and round up, it makes you worry about what that means, what it stands for. Do you want to live in a country that operates like that? That has roving elite guards that kick down doors and steal people in the middle of the night? Because that's what it sounds like to me. Maybe that's the point. Fear. To scare people who are living here illegally. It's not a black and white issue. Many want it to be, but it's not. You can't live in this country if you're not a citizen. And there's a process to become one legally. But people have come to this country under duress. They've lived their lives here. They've been productive members of society, family. And at the end of the day, the only law they've broken is to want something more from themselves and that family. That's hard to argue with. So let's talk about it tonight. Do you like the elite guard coming up to Chicago from the southern border? Good idea? Or a political stunt that history may not look back kindly on? 312-981-7200. That's our first story tonight. I'm Justin Kaufman. Stay with me here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking a little bit about the news today that the Trump administration has deployed a tactical special unit from the southern border to come up and assist ICE when it comes to sanctuary cities. Rounding up people who are living here illegally. Rounding up is the word that's used by in the press release of the leader of immigration, or I guess it would be immigration enforcement. The story that came out, and I want to get to this again, this idea that it's characterized that cities in like Chicago, New York, and Boston, and pretty much all the major cities in the United States are pro illegal immigration. And to some extent, there may be some truth in that because of the politics of it, but they're also, at the end of the day, it just comes down to marshaled resources. The idea that ICE would like Chicago Police Department, the New York Police Department, the Boston Police Department to assist in immigration violations. And the cities have said time and time again that they don't want to be a part of that. That's not part of their deal. They got other fish to fry. So it's a good idea, I think, and I think probably exactly what the city wants, for the federal government to bring in assistance for ICE to help in trying to identify people living here illegally for deportation. The problem is that this smells a little bit more like a political stunt, only because when you read the article and what the acting director of ICE, Matthew Albin, says, he says that deployment comes in response to policies adopted by sanctuary cities, which have made it harder for immigration agents to do their job. He says, as we've noted for years, in jurisdictions where we're not allowed to assume custody of aliens from jail, our officers are forced to make at-large arrests of criminal aliens who have been released into communities. When sanctuary cities release these criminals back to the street, it increases the occurrence of preventable crimes and, more importantly, preventable victims. But then they go on and they talk about, they have some people who have criticized this move because this tactical group, it's called BORTAC. It is a SWAT-like elite unit that is really trained to work at the southern border. So kicking in doors at stash houses, rounding up criminals in very military-like style. Gil Kurlkowski, who's a former commissioner for CPB, I'm not sure what CPB is referenced earlier in the article, a former commissioner which oversees tactical units along the border. He said, sending the officers to conduct immigration enforcement within cities where they're not trained to work could escalate situations that are already volatile. He called the move, quote, a significant mistake. He says, if you were a police chief and you were going to make an apprehension for a relatively minor offense, you don't send the SWAT team. And BORTAC is the SWAT team. They're trained for much more hazardous missions than this. When you read this piece and you read it down the line, you realize that they're only giving 100. I think the unit's only about 100 deep, and it's spread out over 10 American cities. So this is, when you start to think about it, you're like, well, how's a handful of highly trained special elite operatives going to track down everybody who's living illegally in the area? And you start to kind of paint a picture that perhaps this is just a political stunt. Shows that you're tough on crime or tough on illegal immigration. You're cracking down in sanctuary cities in an election year. They say they're going to be there to assist. Now, the mayor of Chicago has just spoken out. She did a video. She released a video that says, you do not have to open your doors to anyone who doesn't have a warrant. She said, quote, we will not be bullied, period, especially like by a bully like President Trump, who trades in hatred and scare tactics. To all our neighbors and friends, I want you to know that Chicago stands with you and will always fight to keep safe. We are a welcoming city and proud of it, and no amount of vitriol will make us think otherwise. She also reiterated, Mayor Lightfoot, what she has said in the past about Chicago police officers. If anyone had been being prohibited to helping ICE enforcement officers, she says, if anyone thinks that they can come here to our city and terrorize our residents into the shadows, let me say this, they got another thing coming. Chicago will always stand strong and will be, we will use all of our tools to keep everyone safe. Let's go to the phones. Mary, welcome to the show. What do you think of this? Do you like the idea of a special elite group coming to Chicago?
No, yeah. I don't.
No?
I'm very concerned.
Yeah.
I'm concerned that they are not. This is not their environment. This is not their context.
Right.
I think that they should not be in our city under these circumstances, under these conditions. I mean, this is like when they used to send in the National Guard sometimes to patrol areas in the civilian areas. They're trained for different purposes.
Right.
And this is not the community that they're trained for. I'm very concerned that the effect this might have on the community, and especially the confrontations that may ensue.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Mary. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. That's the one thing about this. Because I want to play it right down the middle. It's not because it's interesting when you read the New York Times piece, and it's the same thing in the Tribune. This idea that sanctuary cities is not necessarily a liberal or conservative. They both do it. Conservative mayors or liberal mayors, there is a question when it comes to the legality of this, of whose job it is to enforce immigration. If you're in this country illegally, is it the local police's job? Is it the state's police job? Or is it the federal? The state and city, they don't get money to do it. So they're like, hey, we've got our own problems. This is not one of them. And I can understand that. But at the same time, it sounds like what they're saying to the Trump administration and to the federal government. And again, I want to make this clear. You know, there are obviously partisan politics involved and personalities involved. But to act as if this is President Trump and, oh, Obama would never do this. Obama was the deporter in chief. 9 million. I think they showed a stat that said that President Bush was close to 3 million. President Clinton closer to 2. Before President Clinton, deportations were under 2 million for 100 years. So is it possible that the federal government under Obama said, you know, we this is an issue. We see this as an issue. This is not a political issue. We can't have people coming into this country who don't live here. And we will find the resources ourselves because we know we can't just get the local police to do it. And they did it. It seems to me what this is really a fight about is saying it's not as much about the law. And that's how we always want to couch it. But it seems to me about borrowing resources. That the president's administration right now is saying, you know what, we got other things we want to invest our money in. So Chicago police, round those people up and help us. And the city of Chicago's like, hold up. We got other, like I said, other fish to fry. So I have no problem whatsoever with the president bringing new forces or additional resources at ICE's disposal. That's his prerogative. I'm not sure, like Mary says, I'm not sure that the best route is a tactical unit that is trained for SWAT-like military operations. When they're going to go down to back of the yards in Chicago with a tip that somebody there is living illegally, show up in your Humvee, like your Kanye giving away shoes in Wicker Park. I don't know. 870 says, this sounds like it's going to be a nationwide Elian Gonzalez debacle. Remember that? And how that was something that it felt like, well, this is going to be strong. We're going to Elian Gonzalez. You're absolutely right. 630 says, what's wrong with holding and deporting criminal aliens? I don't think there's anything. I think holding is the question. There are already resources, and I think that what is happening is saying that, listen, and I've heard police talk about this and talk about this in a way that is really sane. And the mayoral campaign the last time through, I absorbed some of this. I'll talk to this. I'll speak for them, 630. The holding someone illegally because you assume them to have immigration status issues, they're here illegally. I know that the premise is, well, they don't have rights to be there. But the point being that if there's a mistake, if they are allowed to be here, and that happens way too often. How many people, that is a big part of this article as well, about how many people get swept up who actually are U.S. citizens, but they don't work that stuff out till much later. You think that's not going to go, well, you start bringing BORTAC and SWAT teams in, you think they're going to be checking cards? they're going to be doing what they're trained to do. But the question is, who's on the hook when that goes bad? When the ACLU and lawyers and others get involved to say, you know what, you violated the rights of this person. You kept them in jail for too long. You didn't have a charge and you didn't. Well, we were holding them. ICE was going to come by and get them. Well, that doesn't matter. Judge says 20 mil. And who's paying that 20 mil? You and me. And I think that there's something to be said about that. I know you want to make it a bigger issue. It's like, you know, the progressives are not, they want everyone to roam the streets free. But I do find something to be said about that, that following the letter of the law when it comes to the law, when we're essentially how you hold somebody when you're charging them with a criminal activity, especially when you don't have a charge, it becomes a sticky situation for local municipalities to be on the hook when that in itself becomes illegal. 312-981-7200, very interesting debate, and we'll continue that debate here on the program. We'll talk about it next week as well. Coming up, John Sabine's going to join us, talk about the NBA All-Star Weekend, which seems to be the number one story in Chicago. Wow. If today's events are any indication of what to expect for the rest of the weekend, I'm staying inside. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Justin Kaufman with you here until 11 o'clock tonight, 720 WGN. Well, the big story in Chicago has to be the NBA All-Star Week, which has kicked off. Tonight, the Celebrity All-Star Game is underway at the Wintrust Arena, which is strange. I thought they'd be playing that at the United Center. I was like, God, the United Center got small.
I know. I was thinking, oh, it's at the Wintrust. When you said Wintrust, I had to like... doing double take.
Exactly.
Shout out to Wintrust.
John Sabine's here. He's one of the Bulls Outsiders, which is the great, I'd say, post game show NBC Sports.
I love that. We're like the Seth Meyers to the post game.
There you go. Exactly. Good to see you, buddy. Good to have you here. All right.
It's always so great.
Let's get into this, because today we started to see a little bit of what an NBA All-Star Weekend is like with all the celebrities that have come through, not only just the people that you've seen doing media and everything in town. Kanye West brings through, I don't even know what you call them, like Rush. Someone said they're Russian assault vehicles.
What were those?
Huge black SUVs that are right out of an Arnold Schwarzenegger sci-fi movie, Total Recall.
I don't think this is the time to be doing that, right? Like, I feel like...
And essentially, he showed up in Wicker Park and jumped out and started giving away shoes, his new Yeezy shoes, right?
And those are dope shoes. Yeezys are great.
Yeah, but the problem is that there are also people are saying that they need to put the shoes on. here's the shoes, what's your size? Take your other shoes off, put these on. Like, there's a lot going on. Anyway, caused a lot of chaos in the Chicago neighborhood, which is great for publicity, strange for the rest of us. John, this is the kind of thing we should expect from an event like this?
I think we had to. Like, it's an NBA All-Star Game. Kanye's from Chicago. He was like the first rapper or second rapper with a shoe deal. I think Jay-Z was first, the Sean Carters. I think the vehicles is what But again, now we're talking about it.
Right.
If he shows up, like, you know, Chance just would have shown up on the bus.
Right.
And he would have given away, like, school supplies.
Right. We'd be like, all right, that's a kicker story.
Yeah, here's some food. Yeah, here's right. some here's some gift cards. He would have not gone military. But Kanye, for better or worse, persists. And he's from Chicago, so I guess we
accept it.
We have to. Is there a bigger star right now from him? Like,
no.
He is.
I get it. I get the idea. And I think it's great, and it's novel that he would give out his shoes to the youth of Chicago.
That's
different
good.
Spots. It's all
Those
awesome.
Those are good things.
But if you go online and you find the video of people in Wicker Park who took shots of it,
unnerving.
It really looks Eastern European.
It's
like,
unnerving.
Yeah,
it looks like bread lines. It looks inexpensive. I mean, I heard you earlier, and when I first saw it, I saw the vehicles after the immigration news.
So you thought that?
And I was like,
this
what?
Is it?
I was like, did he get the idea from? Like, because I know they're close.
A good tie together, yeah.
Yeah, he wears the hat and stuff. And so, but that does feel like a Chicago All-Star experience. Yeah. So
what else is going on? Because I've seen all of the ESPN shows and the NBA.com shows and all the other shows are in Chicago and they're doing little, their live broadcasts on Navy Pier and places like that.
I'm shocked how many people showed out for this. I really am. We had for NBC Sports, we had two shows back to back. Tom Haberstroh had a podcast, and he had Aaron Gordon, who's in the dunk contest, who probably should, you know, he's one of the best dunkers in the league.
Yeah, right.
He had Tibbs on, so we got to meet Tom Thibodeau, but it was the greatest thing in the world. And that was so fun. And we had Sarah Kusek, who's the analyst for the Nets. She's the first female analyst for a local, and she's fantastic, came from Chicago. And we also had Tim Hardaway Sr. And, like, we just had that. And I looked online, and there's like 20 of those, you know, and I'm shocked at the
content. I'm shocked as
content.
Well. I had no idea that everyone converged. I understand players and I understand reps and all that kind of stuff, but the people on the peripheral, the people who are alumni of the sport, people who are, you know, work for other teams, other things. I mean, it's nonstop a parade of celebrities
it's
in this
Woodstock.
Town right now.
It's yeah. hip-hop Woodstock. It really is. Have you ever been to an All-Star game before?
No.
I have been. I went to the Vegas one, but we didn't go to the game. I was in college. We drove to Vegas from Santa Clara, California, and that was the first time in Vegas.
And that was an NBA All-Star?
Yeah, and it was a big deal that it was in Vegas.
Okay.
It was the first time it was in a non-NBA city. And then I went to one when it was at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, which is the worst arena to see a basketball game because you're just watching a TV.
Yeah.
It is. I'm shocked at the amount of like content producers, and you can't get enough. It's really weird. And I'm unfamiliar with football and baseball, but there's something, the celebrity aspect of it.
Yeah.
All. Like, I mean, I would love to see the celebrity game's on right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see the list
of who's there.
Wanted to be in
yeah,
that.
Who wanted to be. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the NBA All-Star game. Are you surprised at how big this is and when it comes to all the celebrities that are here? But also, you know, it's a cold day. I mean, I feel bad because I was excited that you could walk down Michigan Avenue and see Charles Barkley or Scottie Pippen or anyone that's any celebrity that's in Common. But
Common's everywhere. There's like five Commons. Doesn't it feel like he's everywhere?
It feels like he's everywhere. I feel like today ruined that. Everyone's in their,
Did it
in their
ruin
black
it,
car.
Is it now a Chicago All-Star Weekend? Like, of course. Like, of course, when it's not Miami, it comes. And this is truly the coldest day of our winter so far.
Right.
This isn't, like, normal. We're cold, and we live here.
What, from the experiences you've had today, because you were all over the town, what's the environment like? I mean, like you said, you just mentioned a couple people that you got to interview, yeah. But what's the environment like? Is it just nonstop pop-ups and events that are everywhere?
And I also feel like I'm on the crust of the, you know, getting down, because there are some people who are in it.
Right.
And I got to go to a couple of things, and I felt like, oh, I'm in. Like, I felt like I was sneaking in, you know? But it feels like there are things across the city. Like, people were talking, like, I'm going here. There's stuff at the AT&T store. It feels like it's a very corporate friendly. And I was like, there's stuff at the AT&T store? What? Why? But, you know, I guess NBA players have cell phones.
Who doesn't, right?
I know. So I do think it's taken over the entire city. And I feel like I took my day job off today. So I felt like Ferris Bueller. I was just going around. I was in hog heaven. I loved it.
John Sabine is one of the Bulls outsiders, the group of guys who do the post game at NBC Sports Chicago. Yeah. He covers the Bulls for the station in a fun way. You're kind of like the fans' perspective.
We get to be the fans' perspective, and they do give us a lot of leeway. We aren't beholden to. Like, we can be critical in a kind way.
Right.
Which is nice.
I was surprised because leading up to this, listening to pundits and otherwise, that this would be about the NBA, but I'm just surprised at how many of the national talk shows want to talk about the Bulls, about where they're at.
And I'm loving
this. Yeah, Zach LaVine is being interviewed about being snubbed, but also what he thinks about the rebuild and all this kind of stuff. It's getting really interesting. Chance the Rapper. People talking about the Bulls and what they expect of this team.
As a Bulls fan, I feel like this is huge because I don't think the fans are happy with how the team has been run. And I think that's justified. Like, I don't think it's irrational. I think the Knicks take a lot of, like, the crazy, like, oh, thank goodness we're not the Knicks. But it's like, well, hold on. Like, they're still at Madison Square Garden. They still get celebrities. It's still like a fun day at the, you know, at the game. It's been interesting how we're under the microscope and literally we're throwing a party and no one's invited. isn't that weird?
They're using our city.
Yeah. We're like, okay, cool. Get everything ready for us. All right. Give us the keys. No Bulls invited. It's bizarre. Like, Charlotte had Kemba Walker last year. You know, there was one. And Zach LaVine should be there.
Right.
He really should.
Well, it also feels a little disingenuous, and maybe that is because we're Chicagoans and no one else is complaining about this. I was talking to an agent who was on the show last night about this as well, that it seems one of the reasons that it's hard for Chicagoans to wrap their head around the NBA All-Star Weekend is because they feels like they went out of their way to not include the Bulls. Like,
yes.
Some sort of punishment. You're going to use the facilities. You're going to use the city, how beautiful it is. But this is not really about Chicago. It's about the NBA, and we'll be gone on Sunday.
Yes, but here's a question. As a Bulls fan, the chatter has been, oh, look, the Bulls aren't invited because the Bulls have been so bad. Do you think this sparks change? I think this accelerates it. I don't see how. I think it's going to be a blessing to Bulls fans by having this kind of awkward, stark. Mm. The mood's weird. It's weird. Like, because it is, all right, well, we're not really invited, you know. Other teams are getting press passes, but since there's no Bulls, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Right.
I think it's going to be long-term, we'll be very grateful we had it. Because I don't know how you can go through this weekend being a decision maker or an owner, expect it to just be business as usual.
That's a great point. And do you see this as because of all the hoopla, the former president is here, Obama's here. The idea that celebrities are here, but they're not here for Chicago would maybe, I don't know, rub off on the Bulls organization. They might get better. We'll see about that. 312-981-7200. John Sabine is here. He's one of the Bulls outsiders, which you can see on the post game over at NBC Sports Chicago. We'll take a quick break and come back. More to come here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. The phone number, Justin Kaufman with you tonight. It's 11 o'clock. 720 WGN. John Sabine is here. He's one of the Bulls outsiders, which is post game over at NBC Sports Chicago. And we're talking about the NBA All-Star Weekend festivities today. It's beyond the sport. It's beyond basketball.
It is.
Today, just following Twitter and paying attention to all of social media, there seems to be every 15 minutes an event that on its own would be the highlight of a weekend in Chicago.
It's Comic-Con. Like, it really is. I'm not cool enough to know where, like,
where the good stuff
any good party is.
Yeah.
But what I like when I eavesdrop on conversations, it feels like there's one on at any bar in River North, like hosted. Like, an ex NBA player who wasn't even that, you know, is hosting something, and like how do you even think to do that? like that's so weird. It's like, I'm gonna go to this thing. I better throw a party.
Right.
I don't, you know, but I think there's a lot of Chicago basketball players from Chicago, and I think we're called the Mecca for a reason, and I think that's what it is. I think it's homegrown, not ex-Bulls players, ex-Chicago players.
Interesting. That's so they're take. Excited to be back, and they want to show their city off, and so they're renting out or hosting parties in nightclubs in Chicago right now.
Exactly. Well, we talked to Tim Hardaway today. He's from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He's from the South
Side. Of
course,
yeah.
My co-host Big Dave has a wonderful story. He went to De La Salle, and he was trying out for the football team, and during a break of the first day of football, he walked into the basketball gym, and Tim Hardaway, who was in the NBA at the time, was playing, shooting, and he just sat down and watched him, and an hour and a half flew by, and he found a pencil and an old piece of paper, and he got this autograph from Tim Hardaway, missed football practice, never played football again. And then we met him today, and he brought the autograph.
Wow,
and
he had to be
you know, 10 or something.
Wow.
No, De La Salle, so he's in high school.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But that was interesting. But he's hosting one with Sean Marion, and I was like, why are they hosting a party? It's like, oh, they're both from Chicago. And I think that's, I think there's something about the homegrown.
And you kinda, I saw Anthony Davis do an interview today where he said, this is important to me to be here, not just to represent the Lakers, but to represent Chicago and show all my teammates and all my, you know, coworkers that what Chicago can do.
I think there's something there. And again, I'm a transplant, so like,
yeah,
I try to learn it, but I don't speak it fluently. And I do think there's a substance there. There is a ambassadorship, and basketball in Chicago was and still is like one of the best cities for games there are. It is a fundamental game that every. I mean, you got Derrick Rose. I mean, you got Kendrick Nunn now coming out of nowhere. You got people, and I feel like there really is like a pride there.
It's an interesting story, too, because Chicago has a team at the top that, of course, was the... And I think really, think about the movie Hoop Dreams and think about Derrick Rose's story.
That was Chicago.
But this idea that you had the mecca of basketball and Michael Jordan that was on the west side of Chicago and drawing... global audiences to what he could do, and at the same time the juxtaposition or the on the other side of the coin you had this rough and tumble city that grew up in the shadow of the United Center that was known to basketball players as the Mecca. Michael Jordan, the streets of
the
Chicago.
Streets. Yeah. Truly, I mean, like, and if you, I remember when I moving here and seeing, I was like, wait, this is seeing how close Hoop Dreams is, and how different it's been right now. You don't realize how in the city, like, those courts are right there. Mm-hmm. You know, they're half a mile that way. And then to get not just Michael Jordan, but to get that team, which is probably the most famous team, would you say, like, of any sport ever?
You're not going to get an argument from me. Yeah,
like,
of course.
Like, maybe, like, a Yankees team from the 20s, or maybe even the 85 Bears. Like, that honestly might be it. But there's never been a team like that where it felt like a band. It felt like they would always joke the Heat were called the Heatles. They weren't even close. Like, the Heat were, you know, they were like Imagine Dragons compared to what the, could you imagine dragons compared to the. And I remember seeing Michael Jordan in those Bulls. We got those games in Texas all the time, and we'd watch it. Like, that's crazy.
That's great. John Sabine's here. He's one of the Bulls outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago. It's the post game of after Bulls games. We're talking about the NBA All-Star Weekend, which is upon us, and how it really is truly remarkable to see how the city is transforming into almost a convention center.
It really does.
It's not just the United Center or McCormick Place or Navy Pier, which does a lot of the ESPN stuff. It's downtown. It's River North. It's neighborhoods like Wicker Park today with Kanye West. It is almost an NBA takeover of the city. And it's surprising. I mean, obviously, tonight's a holiday with Valentine's Day, and people are probably out enjoying their loved ones. But it's hard to get a cab. It's hard to get an Uber. Yeah. There's a lot going on in town right now.
There are bus pickups outside of the studio for the United Center. And I was like, there's someone holding a sign. And I'm like... tape that up. Like, don't make that person be out there. It's too cold. I was like, but like, for the United Center, that they're picking up all the way over here and by the studios, and that's amazing. It does feel like this has been sort of a, you said convention center, and I think that it feels like what I imagine like Oscar parties would be like. Like, I went to an Adidas event today, and then I heard people go like, well, I'm gonna leave here, I'm gonna go to the Jordan event, I'm gonna try to see if I can get into the Nike event. And I was like, what is this? Like, it's like the Vanity Fair party.
You know? Yeah, right.
But I was like, how do you even know? Who are these people?
Who are these people?
And I went with my buddy, who's like kind of an insider, and he knows, he knew like everyone. And it must be just that. It must just be
an industry.
It's an industry night, basically.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the NBA All-Star Weekend. So tonight is a celebrity game, John.
Yes.
Tomorrow we start getting into the skills stuff, and then Sunday is the actual game.
And there's also the Rising Stars tonight. Which I'm super. It's the.
Why are there no Bulls in the Rising Stars game?
Well, we had Wendell Carter.
What about Kobe White?
Kobe White should have been in, and that's insane. Wendell Carter got hurt, and so they replaced him. And I thought he'd be replaced with a Bull. He got replaced with Colin Sexton. He's averaging 20 points a game, and I was like, oh, can't really. But Coby White should be in this. Coby White has had moments where he should be in this. And it's USA versus the world, which is, we actually have a really good world team. And I was like, shocked at how many Canadians. And then then the only singular Bull that's going to be in an event is Zach LaVine, not in the dunk contest, in the three-point contest. So you rolled your eyes.
Why is he not doing the dunk? He's done it before, didn't he?
He's not doing the dunk.
But he did it before.
He's won it twice.
I feel like this is his time to do it in Chicago, where Michael Jordan set the world on fire 30 years ago.
Exactly.
Why not do it again?
Because you just said it. Do you think he's going to be Michael Jordan 30 years ago in Chicago, setting the world on fire with the most iconic dunk ever? No, he's already won twice. I love that he's like, no one has done dunk contest and three-point contest. No one's ever won both. Why not me? Why not? So I do love that he's trying something
new. He's just not particularly the best three-point shooter. That's the problem. See, you think he's going to do well on the
pressure? I have to be. Like, come on. Like, it's like, if I can't believe in this, I don't think he's going to win. Yeah. But if he did, I wouldn't be shocked.
I feel like I haven't watched, I'll be honest, I haven't watched a skills.
I don't want.
Is it still? Are there still 3-point shooters in the NBA? Like little white guys, like Mark.
I mean, those 3-point shooters.
Cavaliers. Mark
everyone's
Price,
a 3-point shooter.
Everyone's
now.
A 3-point shooter. Right.
They should find. It'd be easier to find like a 2-point shooting contest at this point.
There's no more Steve Kerrs, right? Those guys are gone.
Well, as a specialist now,
yeah,
absolutely. But if you can't shoot threes, you can't play. They really should do a mid-range contest at this point. that would be a harder skill.
15-footer.
They really should.
That's a great idea. So they'll do that tomorrow, skills thing, and then the slam dunk contest is probably at night, and then the big thing will be the game, which will be a lot of honoring of Coby Bryant, of course.
I think so.
And then a weird way that they're scoring. Are you excited about the way they're scoring? I have no idea what's happening.
I don't understand it, and I'm stoked for it. Because it's like my job to understand it, and I have no clue what they're doing. But I also love that they are I love a league that is like, we can improve.
Right.
And I love that. And people are like, oh, no, they're changing it. But it's like, it's an all-star game. Let's make it interesting. And if it doesn't work, we'll switch it.
I don't know. And my last question for you. I don't know all-star game culture. I don't know anything about other cities. I rarely pay attention to this stuff. But it seems like being in the middle of it and immersed in it this weekend and just kind of using my news sense that this is a really big deal. Is it a big deal because it's in Chicago? Is it a big deal for the NBA that they are able to shine and showcase in a major city like this?
I think it is. I think it is, especially in a northern winter city. Usually, you know, they are now starting to go to every city, but these used to be like Super Bowls, where you go to warm, you know, it'd be like a vacation.
New Orleans or something like that, right.
It is, and I think NBA is nipping at the heels of the NFL. Like, they'll never get there because NFL has Sunday. That's it. It's easy. But I think we're seeing how pervasive the culture of the NBA is. And as a league, that's really interesting. And especially in a league right now, in a world right now, where every NFL documentary is like sad, and there's a baseball news and it's cheating. And then, you know, I feel like the NBA always has really good publicity in Q ratings.
Yeah.
Like the scandals aren't that bad. And so I think it's cool that it's able to take over such a big city, especially when the team isn't as relevant. I hope it shines a light in the right way.
John Sabine is one of the Bulls outsiders, which you can find on NBC Sports Chicago. He does the post game.
Yeah.
And just text me, hit me up later where you're at. Just let me know. Whatever River North bar you're in, whatever 80s basketball stars.
Me sneaking in with my co-host, like two kids in a trench coat. That's what we'll be doing.
That's the way this is going to happen all weekend. Just text me, tell me where you're at. Right?
I just want someone to text, so please. I just want a friend.
John Sabine, great to have you again, man.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Thanks, Justin.
Justin Kaufman here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200, our phone number. Happy Valentine's Day to all. I will say that, as someone just texted in saying Happy Valentine's Day, that I didn't realize that was such a universal greeting. I thought Happy Valentine's Day was beyond maybe your classmates when you were a kid, was reserved for family, loved ones, friends, things like that, right? It seems to me like it's become more like Happy New Year. hey, happy Valentine's Day. Get a coffee at the Dunkin' Donuts. Happy Valentine's Day, bud. Get off the bus. Thanks for the ride. Happy Valentine's Day. I like it. There's always room for love in the world. But it strikes me that it seems to be a strange greeting. But I say happy Valentine's Day. You got a love story you want to talk about tonight? Let's do it. 312-981-7200. I know for a fact that there are many listeners because they've called in and told us at different times about their experiences. And if you've got a great love story and or just a great Valentine's Day story about how things went down tonight. Earlier in the week, I was talking about the experiment in my household to go to a very simple Valentine's Day. My wife is one who considers Valentine's Day to be a top three holiday. I think it would be Christmas, Halloween, Valentine's Day. Thanksgiving, a close four, right? And so there's always a ton of expectation, and it's very stressful. This year, I think it was over the weekend, this past weekend, she turned to the fam in Target, said, "You know what? Let's go pretty light this year. How about a card and a piece of candy? That's it." And she put her hand out, say, "All in." Me and my son, we put our hands in, "All in, yay." And I was like, yes, living a dream. This is how I grew up with Valentine's Day. A simple gesture. Here's a card. Here's a Kit Kat bar. I love you. Great. Let's move on with our lives. It's February. We still got a couple more months of winter. It's a handshake. I love you. Here's a Kit Kat. Don't lose your gloves. So, of course, I was stymied and surprised when I got to my adult life that Valentine's Day was much more complicated. Dinners and gifts, surprises, almost the 40-year-old's version of the prom proposal. So when I heard this news, it's like, oh, great. And then you all told me, you warned me. You said, oh, I don't know. It seems like you're getting set up. Well, today was the day, and I did well. I got some chocolate, and I got a card with a cat on it. Expensive card, like a $6.99er. It's crazy. And it was received well. Everything was great. No problems. Except when my wife opened the card, she goes, "I thought we said we weren't doing cards." And I was like, she said, your birthday, last time there was some celebratory moment, I said, "Why do we do these cards? Why do we do this? Why do I go to a Walmart? Why do I go to Target and get you a card? I'd much rather write you a note." And I was apparently pretty convincing because I had even forgot that I had said that. And she was like, she wrote a card. It was nice. She did it. And I didn't. I went to the Target and I got a card. And she's like, "I thought we weren't doing cards." And I'm like, "What? What is this? I would you'd never allow me to not give you a card." Like, I was offended. How dare you take away the thing I love most? Going to the Jewel, getting you a card that's been picked over by everyone. Now, there's a difference. You know, you do the artisan cards, go that route and put some thought into it. It's great. But like the dimwits like myself, at least I did it earlier in the week, but it's still picked over, trying to find the envelope that matches the dumb card. Oh, this one has fake fur like a cat's tail. Ah, oh, she'll love this. She loves cats. $6.99? What? Then I told you at the self-checkout line, trying to put the card in the basket. Put the item in the basket. I'm like, it's a card. I can't. Anyway, I got in trouble. Trouble's not the right word. But I got in trouble because I went and got a Hallmark card. And she's right. I was the one who set that rule. I just completely forgot about it. So it's actually the opposite of what I thought. I thought I was being tricked that she would give me side eye for not going more elaborate in the gifting, because that's what we've done in the past. But instead, it was the other way. Actually being like, "Why'd you get me this card? I thought we said no cards." Can't win. So happy Valentine's Day. All right, let's talk about Rage Against the Machine. 312-981-7200. Not necessarily about their music, but about what they're trying to do with their reunion tour to keep scalpers from jacking up the price. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman with you here on 720 WGN till 11 o'clock tonight. Buzz Kilman is in tonight. The great Buzz Kilman is in for Dave Plyer tonight at 11 o'clock. How great is that? Great to have Buzz on the airwaves here at 720 WGN. Buzz Kilman, one of the icons of Chicago radio. Excited to meet him and also to listen to him tonight from 11 to 1, I think it's 1. Man, I'm not sure what the end time is, but it starts at 11. 312-981-7200. All right, so I want to talk about Rage Against the Machine. Not, and a lot of people might be listening like, not my cup of tea. Rage Against the Machine is a, I don't even know what you, a protest but rock band? I love them. Back in the 90s and 2000s, they were kind of an anthem band that seemed to stand up for just causes by screaming into microphones. Tom Morello, local guy. But a great band. But that's not the reason that we're talking about Rage Against the Machine tonight. Rage Against the Machine announced this week that they're going on a reunion tour. They've been broken up for a couple years. We had Tom Morello on not too long ago, where he called in and we talked about his career. And he said, never say never on a reunion with Rage, and here they are. But they're doing a huge tour this summer. It's going to be everywhere. World tour. They're coming to Chicago, I think, in May. And the tickets, of course, are going to be expensive because it's a big deal. And they're playing arenas. I think they're playing the United Center. But they've gone out of their way, and they seem to be one of the first to do so, to really try to come up with a system to take on scalpers. So Tom Morello has been giving interviews, and he's been talking about how they hate scalpers more than their fans do. They really don't like the concept that has happened in major concert venues throughout the land, where scalpers buy in bulk tickets to big shows and sell them on the secondary market. They figured out through either really advanced technology, or they've just got like 17 hardline phones, that when Ticketmaster puts something on sale, they go ahead and buy it. They buy in bulk so they can resell it to you at a way higher price. Tom Morello and Rage Against the Machine are trying to come up with a way to stop that. There's only, at the end of the day, there's not a lot they can do. But Tom Morello has made it very clear. He said, listen, the most expensive ticket, he tweeted this out today, the most expensive ticket for any Rage show is $125 plus service fee. With the exception of charity tickets, where 100% of the additional proceeds go to charity. Any other ticket and any other price is from scalpers. So they sold 90% of their tickets at $125. They got scooped up in 5 seconds. They also, what they did, and this is where they're getting pretty interesting and trying something new, is they held at every arena they play, they held 10% of the tickets back. And they did this because they are holding in reserve 10% of the seating, random seats throughout each venue, to sell at a higher ticket price, but low enough to undercut the scalpers. So they want to make it miserable for scalpers who are trying to jack up the market by selling their own tickets. They held 10% back. The money raised will go to charities and activist organizations in each city. So these are expensive tickets. These are going to be the $300 ones, the $400 ones. But they say, buy those tickets, you get the seat, and that money is going straight to charity. And they're doing it because they still want to undercut scalpers. Because scalpers are going to say $1,000, $1,500, $2,000. And they want to flood the market with quote-unquote valuable tickets, or value tickets at $400. Crazy. But that's what they're doing. They're flooding it so it's pretty obvious that scalpers are charging way too much money. And they'll be undercut by the band. It's something. Have you had good relations? Do you buy on the secondary market? Do you buy tickets on the secondary market? Are you going to big shows and you're not actually waiting in line at Ticketmaster? And you're actually going and finding tickets for shows at Wrigley Field or United Center or Soldier Field on the secondary market? Do you have stories of dealing with scalpers that could help others? 312-981-7200. You can call us. You can text. It's interesting what the band's doing. I don't know if it'll work, but at least it's something. Tom Morello goes out of his way. He, in all caps, we hate scalping as much as you do. All caps. And he also said, if they find out that it's being abused by Ticketmaster or other services, they'll sue. Rage will sue them. Something to be said. Although I have to say, let me get off on a rant here. But for a ticket price of $350, the amount of service fees from Ticketmaster is obscene. Today, Pete Zimmerman and I, we looked it up. We tried to test market. We tricked the system. We're not going to buy your tickets. We're going to act like we are, but we're not going to buy them. And we went, and I think it was a $375 ticket. We'll get two. The service fee for that United Center show was $60 a ticket. $60. We looked at other venues across the country. We pretended like we were El Paso. We're El Pasoans. Same thing. Bigger markets, bigger ticket prices. It's varied, but or fees. But $60, are you crazy? What has happened? W. Kamau Bell, great commentator and comedian. He's on CNN. He tweeted out that about Ticketmaster and the fees. I think it was about Rage Tickets. I remember when Pearl Jam was making their whole career about taking on Ticketmaster. Remember that? They wouldn't use Ticketmaster, and we all were like, what? Where are we going to get the tickets? We'll try something else, you know? But the whole point was, why are they charging so much money? The idea that you're going to charge $60 fees, that's asinine. That's obscene. That's elite. That has to be criminal. And it's not. That's the problem. Can you imagine the fees for a ticket is $60? What are you talking about? Where are we living? This, again, goes to my societal constitutional convention we're going to have. We need a Thomas Jefferson of ticket fees. Who's going to be that? But he said what W. Kamau Bell said, which is great. He said, I wish I could go back in time and support Pearl Jam for that fight. Because nobody did. We all were like, meh, okay, what does it mean? Well, okay. Pearl Jam, oh, it's going to be harder for me to get a ticket? Meh. I don't care. Just play music. To think of them now, was that 10 years ago plus? To where we're at now, where the prices, the fees to go to a concert like Rage Against the Machine, a reunion tour, which is already going to be expensive, they're just gouging you. They're just gouging. And there was a band that was very popular in its day that we all loved, that was trying to tell us and warn us, the canary in the coal mine. And we were like, just play your guitar. 630 says, here's how you solve that problem, Justin. You sell tickets at the door at the venue, or you pick up your tickets at the door at the venue. There, some have been doing that. That's interesting. I saw somebody doing that. I forgot what show that was. It may have been Madonna. Someone where they don't let to kind of crack down on bots, that you got to come get it. Someone was telling me about that. 217 says StubHub is very reliable for concerts and sports. The service fees are far less than Ticketmaster. On StubHub, in many cases, you can instantly print tickets. No, I get that. You're going to be more expensive. It's secondary market. 630 says the last 5 years, anything I bought for my kids was through secondary market. It's ridiculous. Gosh, remember, I can't be the only one for my age group. Do you remember when you would go to, I guess it'd be Ticketmaster, whatever it was, but you want to go see U2, the Zooropa tour, something like that. And you're, or the rhythm and, was the rhythm and hum, or what was that the name of it? The, you would just get on the landline and keep trying to call the number to try and get through. Do you remember that? You had five of your friends trying to do the same thing, trying to get that U2, Joshua Tree tour. And you never got through. Those are, we need those days back. Where all, the only way you can get a ticket is that you have a landline and you stretch that cord from the kitchen to the living room. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, boop. Get the busy signal. That's how it should be done. 312 says the problem isn't Ticketmaster. The problem is people who will pay no matter what the cost. Maybe. The only way to get rid of Ticketmaster and high fees is for music fans to boycott all concerts until the fees come down. Wow. I'm okay with that. I don't think I've ever seen a concert that would have a Ticketmaster fee like that. I guess Lollapalooza falls in that category. But beyond that, I'm not one that goes to these big reunion shows. Maybe the right band has to reunite. Maybe you're like me. You have one band, two bands that you really like. And Rage Against the Machine, I like. That would get you off your chair and spend the money. 312-981-7200. Let's continue to talk about scalping, but also let's talk about what band would get you off your chair. If there's a reunion tour that would get you to spend $50 in service fees. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. Phone number. Justin Kaufman with you here till 11 o'clock tonight. Talking about two things. One, buying tickets on the secondary market and your horror stories of dealing with the service fees. And W. Kamau Bell said today on Twitter, boy, I wish I would, I wish I would have listened to Pearl Jam 10, 15 years ago when they were standing up. They were the band. I mean, it's one thing Rage Against the Machine to say, hey, we're going to take on scalpers by charging you more money. I know it's for charity, but it's still a capitalistic approach to it. Pearl Jam was like, we're just not doing it. I wish we would have saw that as a moment, as 312 says, where we boycotted the music industry so they changed their ways. But we didn't. And now for Rage Against the Machine tickets and others that are coming this summer, so many great reunion shows that are coming through, you're going to be paying some upwards of 20, more than what a ticket price used to cost. I feel like when I went to Lollapalooza in 1993 and saw Rage Against the Machine, it was $30. Right? 25? Maybe a little bit. Maybe it was a 40. But it was not any more than that. Now, Lollapalooza is $300. 312-981-7200. I also asked what band would make you pay the fee? If there was a reunion press conference with a mystery guest set for tomorrow morning, who would you hope it would be? And then you'd be like, I don't care about any Ticketmaster fee. I'll pay $150. I don't care what I pay. I got to see these guys again. 702 says, I would greatly pay the fees if it was to see the band Journey with Steve Perry. You can't be without Steve. Yeah, I mean, you can see Journey now. They're playing. They might be at one of the NBA All-Star weekend parties. 773 says, no question, Led Zeppelin. Yeah. Led Zeppelin, I guess you're right. I mean, yeah. I don't know how. Did they not reunion? I feel like, I guess they're always solo now, right? I guess you're right. I feel like they have done a reunion before. Maybe they have. Pete's the music guy. Pete Zimmerman would know. Has Led Zeppelin done reunion shows in the past?
You know, I'm not sure if they have, but, you know, they have their original drummer, John Bonham, has passed away, right, so right. It couldn't be a real reunion.
Right.
You know, you get his kid to drum or something like that.
Which would be fine. Most Led Zeppelin fans would be fine with that, though.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
779 says Lollapalooza 94. They had a reunion of the Lollapalooza lineups from the early 90s. How great would that be? That's a great idea. That's an amazing idea. Lollapalooza should do that. Especially with Rage Against the Machine this summer. Because, you know, Rage is going to do this world tour, and the first thing I said is they're probably coming to Chicago for Lollapalooza. They're coming in May. And then you look on Twitter and people are like, I don't think they're going to play Lollapalooza. They got all these dates. But again, Pete and I, we had a lot to do this afternoon, a lot of research projects. And in this one, we looked at the, this is what we did. This is what a good investigative reporter does. Looks at their tour schedule, looks at when Lollapalooza is, matches them up. They play on a Thursday in New Jersey, and they do not have another show until Tuesday in wherever. So the weekend of Lollapalooza right now on their schedule in August is open. So my guess is there will be an announcement that Rage, who has a long history with Lollapalooza, they've played it a number of times, would be the headliner. But I love the Lollapalooza 94, Alice in Chains, Primus, at Tinley Park. That's the other thing, too. They have the reunion. They have to bring back the old venues. You can only see it if it was at Tinley Park or at Alpine Valley. Nowhere else. And they have the Jim Rose side circus show. They'd have to be there, too. That's great. 217 said, the most I ever paid for a single ticket was $100 from a scalper for the first Pink Floyd tour after Roger left. I sat second row center. Wow. Show was incredible. 773 says, I saw an Elvis concert in 1972. The ticket was bought on a day through the box office. Price of the ticket, $10. Fifth row from the front. That's amazing. 312 has a point of order in the game we're playing, referencing someone who said Led Zeppelin. No, it doesn't count. You can't do an authentic reunion show if one of the original members is either not going to do it or is dead. Those are the rules. We can make up. We can do it. That's good. I feel like that's I'm with it. 312. It's hard to be Led Zeppelin without John Bonham. They'll try. They'll definitely try. 219 says the Beatles. We knew that one was going to come, but you can't do it. I mean, I'm sorry I didn't make it clear. This isn't a fantasy world in which they would either be holograms or be brought back from the grave. They have to be alive to play. And friends, because Ringo and Paul, I'm not sure what's going on there. Here's a good one. 312 says, how about AC/DC? I would love to see AC/DC live. I wonder if that ages well. An AC/DC. That guy's voice is so crazy. Could he do it at, I don't know how old those guys are, 70? Probably, for at least one show. I saw during, I think it was the Grammys maybe, or Oscar, I forgot what it was, but one of the, maybe it was Super Bowl weekend. Now they made the Super Bowl weekend like the NBA All-Star game, where there's just like all weekend, and they had Guns N' Roses on stage in one of the Saturday night shows I was watching on Fox. Not aging well. Axel, it's a young man's game. It's nothing against him. It is nothing against Axl Rose. But when he was singing when he was in his 20s at that ha, I don't know how you do that when you're in your 50s. Mary, texting in, I used to go to the Dominic service desk to buy my concert tickets. That's right. It's also where you could bring a Coke can in to get a $10 off a Great America ticket. It was exciting, of course, as Mary says. As a teenager, you go to the Dominic service desk. You go to it was like an event. I think I bought tickets to the Jackson's Victory Tour. A few Rick Springfield shows. I miss Dominic's. I know you were an Omni guy, so I know how you feel.
I did, yeah.
Omni was part of the cousin. The unliked cousin of the Dominic's family, the Omni, which was kind of hadn't figured out wholesale grocery stores. Dominic's was the grocery store, and then Omni was, things are bigger. And we don't really have shelves, we have pallets. It was like before the Costco revolution. So all that was, you could buy three instead of one. Oh, can I get help? No. That's essentially it. That was the Omni. Yeah. 312. AC/DC works. They did a new album after they lost their lead singer, Back in Black. Oh, yeah, right. Does work. 224 says, back in 1975, I saw the Beach Boys for $10. That would, yeah. It becomes a point of pride for us, doesn't it? It becomes a point of pride about how much value we had, or how much value we procured when seeing our favorite band. It becomes a brag, becomes a story to say, I saw that band for free, or I saw that band for $2. I saw Elvis, $10, third row, fifth row. My story about with Rage Against the Machine, I just remembered this. I'm getting old. It was 1994, and I saw Rage Against the Machine open up for Cypress Hill at Northern Illinois University. I didn't go there. I was at Columbia College downtown, but there was a caravan going up there, got in somebody's car, and we went. And I don't think we had tickets. You just showed up and you paid $10. And it was Rage Against the Machine and Cypress Hill. Cypress Hill was a little too much. This was before you were used to that smell. You know, not even 18, going, geez, you got real musty in here. I think it was on the campus too. I don't know where specifically where it was. 940 says, what about ABBA? ABBA. I don't know why I call it ABBA. ABBA, right? Swedish. Dancing Queen. Yeah. They had a musical about it too, right? So, I mean, they feel like they would be a great... I feel like they're together. It doesn't feel like a band that would have broken up, but maybe they are. I don't know much. 815 nails it. 815 with... This is the top of the mountain. Pete, you will agree. REM. Michael Stipe and Company. If they said they were doing a reunion tour tomorrow... You'd waive the Ticketmaster fee. You'd say, you know what? All right, I'll pay the $40 ticket fee to go see REM play at Chicago Theater. That's a good one. That's a great one. Can you beat it? REM. You would pay the ticket price. You would pay not only the ticket, which would be $150, but you'd pay the $60 in ticket fees to see REM do stand. All right. I like it. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. We've got more people who are texting in. They're the band that they would pay the ticket fees for if they announced a reunion. Stay with us. Some great texts coming in. People seem to be really getting into this idea. The idea we're talking about tonight, this is, you know, Rage Against the Machine announced their reunion tour. Tom Morello came out and talked about trying to stop scalpers, and it also reminded us of doing a little sleuthing, tricking Ticketmaster, taking it all the way to the edge. Pete Zimmerman took it all the way to the edge on his computer today. And two buttons, one that said pay or cancel. If he hit the wrong button, he was on the hook for like $800. And he chose wisely. He chose cancel. But we got the order, and it was $60 in fees to get a ticket for Rage Against the Machine. That's nuts. Got us talking about what would be the one reunion tour. It doesn't have to be a reunion tour, but it's more fun than it's a reunion tour. What would be the one reunion tour that you would say, I don't care what the fee is. I'll pay $50. I'll pay $60. On top of the ticket, because I got to see REM. REM, the front runner on that. That's a very interesting one. The lines are lit up here. 312-981-7200. Squat says one of the greatest concerts he's ever attended was Johnny B and the Leisure Suits. I'd go to a Johnny B and the Leisure Suits concert in a heartbeat. I would too. That would be great. We're all crazy in Chicago. I don't know if I'd be so happy about that Ticketmaster fee. I was going to see Johnny B, and I was all excited about it. And then they're like, yeah, you got to pay $50. I'm like, I'll just get the old CD out. I'll get the sax out. Listen up. Just play it live. 815 says, how about U2? Is U2 broken up? I feel like they're just always on tour, right? But that's great. I mean, U2 concerts are great. Remember when U2 concerts were the rage? And you almost got shamed if you didn't go to a U2 concert? Every summer, it seemed like they would have a concert that had a detachable stage and stuff moved around. And Bono would come out from the floor and come on, and everyone would be like, you don't go see U2? What's wrong with you? But I do remember U2 was, I forgot, what was the, what I guess it was Rattle and Hum? Rhythm and Hum? Rattle and Hum? I think it was that tour that I remember. I was in high school and I was dating a girl and she really liked U2. So we had six different people on landlines trying to get through to Ticketmaster to go see. And we no one got through. It wasn't like calling a radio station. It was a night that like Ticketmaster, that's how it used to be, right? Just stretching that cord as long as you possibly could until it snapped. That's how it should be. That's the only way to beat scalpers these days. Because, you know, scalpers would be like, I don't have time for this. No bot can get past the landline kitchen phone. 708 says, REM, St. Rita Prom, 1972. What does that mean? They played the St. Rita Prom? What does that mean? No, there's no way. St. Rita Prom, 1972. Maybe they're saying they'd pay the Ticketmaster fees to go back to that 1972 St. Rita prom. Hmm. '847 said, in 1997, I saw Backstreet Boys open up, warm up for Hanson. They're coming back. Backstreet Boys are on a tour, right? It was the B-Bash at the Rosemont Horizon. Yeah, now you're talking. I wish I was at that show. That sounds like... That makes you larger than life. 309 says The Runaways. All right, 224 says Chicago and the Beach Boys. They have a ticket from Chicago Stadium. They sent me a picture of the ticket. $10. Weintraub Concerts presents Chicago and the Beach Boys. No refunds. Saturday, June 7th, 1975, 8 p.m., Chicago Stadium. That's an awesome ticket. Thank you, 224. That's awesome. Wow. Lisa texting in. She said, no doubt about it, Talking Heads. Is David Byrne on Broadway now? Is that why we see him all the time? I see a bunch of people on social media doing selfies and tag David Byrne. I'm like, I don't understand what's happening here. Is he just all, every night he's got a show in New York? Yeah, Talking Heads, absolutely. That's a great one. Pay $50. You pay a $50 ticket fee for that one. I think you would, right? I might do that. I was just thinking about that. It kind of jostled my memory a little. I wonder if do that for Joni Mitchell. Like if Joni Mitchell came around again and she said she's going to go out on tour, and I feel like Joni Mitchell would be someone that she'd say, you know what? I really want to see that live. I've heard that record so many times. Blue, the whole bit. You never really see her on tour. She's kind of a shut-in. I don't even know if that's true or not. No idea. But don't you think that... Pete, wouldn't you... I don't know. Maybe she's always touring. I just miss it.
She's ill. She's been ill for a while. So I think that's why we haven't seen her much.
Okay. Well, let's say that she gets well. Health improves, I'd be like, you know what? Here's your $50, Ticketmaster. Yeah, I would do Joni Mitchell. That's a good one. 847 says, my mom yelled at me for buying a scalped Rush ticket in 1984. Instead of $12.50, I paid $15. Mom. 630 says, my very first concert was Molly Hatchet and Scandal at Poplar Creek. Come on. A free concert, probably 1982. I'll take that. These are great. Oh, man. That is good. 312-981-7200. REM fan, but I'd rather see AC/DC. Okay, take that. Let's see here. By the way, 312 says AC/DC was far better band with Bon Scott. There's a lot of AC/DC. The reason I'm hesitating on the texts is there are six or seven texts in a row. They're just arguing about the theory of AC/DC. I don't know, like you mentioned AC/DC and everyone's just going crazy for it.
I think it's similar to the Van Halen. Do you like David Lee Roth? Do you like Sammy Hagar? Bon Scott was the Highway to Hell guy. Mm. Brian Johnson, you know, is the, you know, Back in Black guy.
Could have fooled me. I feel like they're the same guy. I hate to say it, but, and I love AC/DC, but I don't know if I got too into behind the music on the band. More importantly, I don't know why. It's really sparked six or seven text chains of people just telling me the history of AC/DC. I'm like, that's not really what we're talking about. 779 says Def Leppard, $75, 1993, front row seat. Van Morrison, 815 says, there's a good one. Does Van Morrison tour? I feel like Van Morrison's at Ravinia all the time. I feel like you can do that. I don't... 708 says, how about the original Chicago? Yeah. Like a Peter Cetera we're talking about? I'd say the same thing about Styx. If Styx was like, hey, we're coming back and we got Dennis DeYoung and he's going to do Mr. Roboto and it's going to be awesome. We're all back together. Can they do that? Does anyone die in that band? Because there's a big split, right? DeYoung is not Styx, and they don't like each other. Maybe they like each other. I don't know how it works out. But that would be a good one to come back together. Because then they can do Come Sail Away, and they can do Blue Collar Man. They can do them all. I like that. In 1982, my father, then 57 years old, took the younger brother at the time, was 15, and his friend to REO Speedwagon in Dayton. I came home with a contact buzz. An REO Speedwagon? That's funny. How about Glenn Miller? Glenn Miller? The orchestra? Wouldn't that... I might look that up. I would think that Glenn Miller would be already passed. Maybe not. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, that's confused the heck out of me. To say Glenn Miller. I don't think Glenn Miller's alive. I saw Judy Collins 5 years ago. The concert was dreadful. She sang practically all Irish music. She didn't even sing Send in the Clowns. Well, there you go. 630 says, my first concert was Styx in 1972 at Wheeling High School, right before Lady hit the charts. Great song. How about this one? Pure Prairie League opening up for Ambrosia at Chicago Fest in 1980. People are just telling me their concerts now. Black Sabbath, 73. Amphitheater, $8. Black Sabbath would be great. You can't do that, but boy, oh boy. And I feel like Ozzy's kind of done that, right? Gwen, you Styx played your high school?
Styx played at Notre Dame for Girls when they first started out, man. I'm not kidding you. Junior prom.
That's so awesome.
I'm like, yeah, I was ready to text you, and then you started talking about them. I'm like, oh, I just want to tell them.
That's awesome. So what a great junior prom.
Yeah, it was. It was. And it was like, I guess when they were starting, early stages of being popular and starting to be known, those early 70s. Yeah. I graduated 76. So.
Awesome. Thanks, Gwen. Thanks for that. And thanks, everyone, for calling in. Coming up, we're going to talk to Snap 36, downloading Chicago Business, and we'll continue. We'll figure it. We got a great show lined up here. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman with you, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm on the air till 11 o'clock tonight. Buzz Kilman is up at 11 o'clock. He is in for Dave Plyer tonight. Great to have Buzz Kilman here on 720 WGN. Looking forward to that. Talking a little bit about what band Would you forego, or I wouldn't even say forego, you would fork up the Ticketmaster fee to see reunion? Somewhere, it's funny because I got a million texts on this in the right before we went to the news, and it morphed from what band to the first concert you ever saw, which is great. And that's an awesome topic, and I'd love to hear more of those. But I'm saying, if there's a band in your head where you're like, hey, you know what? If Joni Mitchell is going to go back on tour, I say the heck with it. I'll pay the $50 Ticketmaster fee. Because right now, I'm not seeing anything. I want to support musicians. I want to give them my hard-earned cash for the work that they do. But man, you got a lot of vultures around you. To be able to make money, you guys are letting corporations just siphon off the top. And it's hard. We're talking about this because Rage Against the Machine announced that they're coming back out on tour. They're doing a reunion tour. But the ticket fee to get a ticket, which is about $125, is astronomical. It's anywhere from, I mean, it varies from town to town and arena to arena, but you end up paying $50-$60 in ticket fees, which is just it's stunning to think that's how much money Ticketmaster, to be able for you to buy a ticket, is charging you. So we already talked about it, but what we already talked about the ticket fees and how asinine that is. But what's the band, the one band that you would go, all right, I'll pay it. Fine, I'll pay it. We get a lot for Led Zeppelin, which we kind of argued about the idea of you could really do a reunion tour of Led Zeppelin since John Bonham passed. But if John, I'd put an asterisk on that one because it'd say John Bonham's kid does play drums. And if it was John Bonham's kid, it's close. You take that. We were also talking about AC/DC. Really kind of went into the weeds on AC/DC. As 815 says, the difference, though, because Pete had mentioned that AC/DC has the same form of fans like Van Halen, where they compare the band when it was Bon Scott or the singer that took over for Bon Scott. 815 says, difference is Bon Scott died. David Lee Roth just forgot how to sing. Ooh! Go Van Hagar. It's hard to deny that if you've seen David Lee Roth. Also, I don't want to get on a rant here, but Van Halen, it was a great band, love Van Halen. I think they would be on the, they would definitely be on the reunion. If they did a reunion, they got their stuff together, and it was David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar, I don't care. Both of those bands would be interesting for a reunion. But my friend, I told a story a while back. My friend bought my son a Van Halen t-shirt. It was like from a thrift store. It was the classic, you know, 1984 baby smoking a cigarette. Or it might have been the VH, whatever it might be. And my son was like, I don't know who this is. And we're, you know, there are a bunch of adults around, and we're like, Van Halen. You don't know Van Halen? And he's 12 years old, and he's like, no, I don't. And so we said, let's go ahead and go to YouTube, and we'll show you some of the music videos. You'll love Jump, Hot for Teacher, Panama. Hot for Teacher, maybe not. The videos for those songs, I don't even, it's like out of a time capsule of how we thought about standards and morals and what was wholesome at the time. I don't know if the Van Halen videos of Panama and Jump and Hot for Teacher would be okay in 2020. To say it, but I know that sounds contradictory. It sounds counterintuitive that you would think that now you watch a music video in 2020. Oh, I see what J-Lo and Shakira did on stage at the Super Bowl. Go watch Panama. Go watch Hot for Teacher, and you'll see a bunch of bikini-clad women with pretty much 80s nothing covering them, and David Lee Roth in a variety of hip huggers with banana hammock-like cod pieces would you call them, right? Essentially humping everything that moves. It's startling. I just shut it off halfway through out of embarrassment of watching this with my 12-year-old son. And I mean, I'm 45 years old. I know Van Halen. I had completely forgot about it. It was strange. That's I know I'm off on a tangent, but it was nuts. I want to get back to this, but Van Halen, the standards have changed definitely, and I'm not sure that they changed for the worse. It might have been for the better. 312-981-7200. I want to get to Joe. I got a bunch of texts that are on the line too. We'll take a 2-minute break here. We'll be back in a second. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. Joe, I promised you were first. Joe, what would you shell out money for or pay the fees for to see?
I just paid $340, about $340, two tickets to see the Stones in St. Louis.
Okay, that makes sense though, right?
This morning. Yeah.
So they're on tour.
This morning.
So, I mean, that's almost like a rite of passage, right? People got to see the Stones before they're gone.
Well, yeah. I saw them in 1981 at Rosemont, and that was supposed to be their last tour.
Thanks, Joe.
So if my calculation is correct, it's 2020, and they're still going.
It's still going, man.
Charlie Watts is 78. He's the oldest, so who knows?
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for that. Yeah, Stones, I don't know what it is, and this is something that is maybe specific to me, and I don't know where I missed the boat on this, because my brother, he goes to all these shows. He'll go to McCartney. He'll go to Stones. Go to other big shows that are coming through. I've never been to one of those shows. I've never seen Paul McCartney. I've never seen the Stones. I've never seen U2. I've never seen any of the dance bands, the rappers, anything where they're in an arena. I've never seen a show at the United Center. I don't know what it is. Like, that just doesn't appeal to me at all. I've never seen a show at Soldier Field, like when Taylor Swift or Beyonce or BTS comes through. Never seen anything at Wrigley Field. The only thing that I saw was Lollapalooza, which I guess is similar in that concept, right? But to go and, like, I thought about maybe shelling out the money to see Motley Crue, Poison, and Def Leppard this year at Wrigley Field. Only because a bunch of guys on the group text were like, we got to do this. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, can you do all of it? I don't want to, can you just show me where to be? I don't know. 630 says, how about this one? Cruel World Tour this summer. Cruel World. 10 bands are reuniting for this tour. Cruel World. Morrissey. Okay, I'm listening. Bauhaus. Blondie. Devo. Echo and the Bunnymen. The Psychedelic Furs. The Violent Femmes. The Church. English Beat. Public Image Limited. Gary Numan and Mark Almond. And more. Wow. That's just one genre of music just wrapped up. One bow, right? That would be a cool show to see. I wonder how much money that is. Is that coming to Chicago? It says on the, it just says that they're doing it. I think this is in LA. Or could you imagine that? Being in Tinley Park? World music? Sounds like something right out of the alt 90s. And I'll put $10 that Morrissey bows out. It's like, I didn't know it was going to be outside. 312-981-7200. 708 says, how about Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band? Top dollar every time. I know they just went on tour, but I'd pay the Ticketmaster fee for that. Okay. Another one for Led Zeppelin. 312 says, I saw Motley Crue and Ozzy Osbourne for Shout at the Devil tour at Rosemont. Shout at the Devil. Not with the devil, at the devil. I know they did a dumb miniseries. I don't know if it's a miniseries, but a show for a movie for Netflix based off the book The Dirt, which is the Motley Crue autobiography. But in the book, this didn't make this show, but I read the book. It's one of my favorite books of all time. There's a lot on that tour. There's a lot with Ozzy and Motley Crue hanging out next to the crappy motel pool. It's worth it just to see Tommy Lee going, Ozzy was crazy, and seeing Liz reading. But it's and I've always loved that book because it tells each one of them in the band tells the same story. So there'll be a paragraph and it'll say Nikki Sixx, and then a paragraph say Tommy Lee. That was crazy, and they'd have their version of it. So it was fun to read how it all kind of summed up or where they were. Like Tommy Lee would be like, I was coming out of my room and I saw Ozzy eating a rat, you know. And biting a head off a chicken or something. And then it'd be like Nikki Sixx, like, I dared him to bite this rat. You know? You're like, wow, this is the best read of all time. And I'm not embarrassed about it. I'm reading this thing full. I'm bringing that thing on the plane. I take the dirt with me everywhere I go. Let people know what kind of guy I am. That I like the crew. 312-981-7200. 847 says, I'd see Tom Jones. Yeah, Tom Jones still alive? Yeah. Playing Vegas circuit stuff like that? You'd waive the fee for Tom Jones? He should be paying you. Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd does this once in a while, though, don't they? But again, that's one of those where you got to get everybody back together, and I don't think you can. Gwen texted in not too long ago talking about more about Styx. Because they're from Chicago, Dennis DeYoung played at a lot of the school auditoriums. That's how he got to Notre Dame High School for the girls. Okay? 72 to 76. That's how they got their band rolling. Not a bad idea. You know, congrats to John Records Landecker, who's now in the Hall of Fame, and he was on this week on WGN. I think he was both on Roe and with Bob. When we talked to him a while back, a couple of years ago, we had a conversation about his book. He said that was a big part of how he got successful. He said he would do the show and then he would do assemblies. He'd do high school assemblies and he would have a thing about here's how music is produced or here's how radio is done. And it was just a excuse to get up on stage and, you know, get in front of these kids, and those are the kids that are listening to radio. It's a great, and you think about, when you think about that, and you think about Styx doing the same thing in the 70s, that was a tried and true pathway to success. You still see that a little bit, you know, I think you see that maybe in more of the urban contemporary radio stations where the jocks are always at different high schools introducing bands, things like that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 678 says, oh my gosh, I went to YouTube. I just watched Hot for Teacher. And you are totally correct. It is very inappropriate for 2020. Yes. I'm not alone. I thought I was prudish. I was like, yeah, am I just like forgetting this? No. That Van Halen video, that one, and try Panama and try... Well, when he does the solo stuff, it gets off the rails. When he starts doing Just a Gigolo, whatever that song, and then he does the California Girls. But Hot for Teacher, you're just like blown away at what Van Halen was able to do with their videos on MTV in the early 80s. It almost feels like we have actually... If you watch that, and then the outrage over J-Lo and Shakira, and you're like, nah. That was nothing compared to what Van Halen was doing while you were just sat your kids in front of a TV thinking MTV was safe. You're watching Van Halen. He runs around in the video with the dumbest look. He's got no shirt on, maybe suspenders, but he's on a stage and they're pretending like they're performing live. And then he's just got these spandex pants. And everything is about accentuating the center of those pants in the most obscene, obvious way. It is so dumb. It's so gross, so dumb, and so inappropriate. Thank you, 678, for checking that out and backing me up on this. 847 says, how about Steely Dan in a heartbeat? Yeah? You'd forego the Ticketmaster fee for Steely Dan? 708's got one better, Grand Funk Railroad. Yeah? Like I said, I think mine would be Joni Mitchell. Right? I feel like that's it's one that you can't see that often. It'd be pretty cool. Tom, you saw John Landecker?
Yeah, I did.
When you were in high school?
Yeah, he came in 1975. I was a sophomore. And it was 1977. I was a sophomore.
Okay, all right.
He came to Cary Grove High School, and Cary was really small then. It's still a small little sleepy town, but he was commenting about the cows and the farm fields, and and he had us all yelling. Kiss was coming to town, and he had us all yell, Cary Grove, and rocks. And then that night, we all were listening to the radio.
Right, that's what he said.
Made like a Kiss concert with us yelling our school out in it.
Yep, smart, right?
Yeah,
you've never forgotten it. Yeah,
very,
never forgot it. Thanks, Tom. That's right. That's exactly right. That's what he said, that he would do that and he would record some stuff. And then that night he would tell them all to listen and he'd play the tape and you became hooked to John Records Landecker. It's awesome. That's an awesome way to think about it. 312-981-7200. 312 says the difference today that the videos are done with chicks with no talent. They have to be nude to make you forget that they suck. I don't know about that. I would push back on that because I don't think Shakira or J-Lo sucks. They're pretty dang talented to be up there doing what they're doing. If you were going to make a strong argument and a one that was beyond just our hearts and our opinions, probably more talent than David Lee Roth. Maybe not Eddie Van Halen. I'll give you that. There was a maestro on the guitar. But with David Lee Roth up against J-Lo in a talent contest, you'd be like, And then you go, I wonder why David Lee Roth did that. If you're calling out that J-Lo is only, you know, she's up there half naked because she has no talent, what was David Lee Roth doing? That seems pretty sexist because David Lee Roth knew he didn't have much talent. So he's like, all right, I'm going to put on these spandex. I'll have long hair and spandex, and there we go. 312-981-7200. Getting some great stuff tonight. Give us a call, text. We're having fun. Happy Valentine's Day. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you here. We're talking rock and roll tonight. It's kind of conversation that started with Rage Against the Machine and has morphed into David Lee Roth's inappropriateness. What we're talking about is, you know, just as we kind of go back and look a little bit at the Super Bowl halftime show and about everybody kind of clutching their pearls over the inappropriateness of J-Lo and Shakira, I told the story about when I showed Miles, my son, a couple of the old 80s videos of Van Halen, a great rock band. He didn't know who they were. We saw this as a teachable moment. Oh, you don't know who Van Halen is? Started talking into our remotes. Show us Van Halen, Hot for Teacher. Or Van Halen, Panama. And it wasn't just that it was a different time, of course. But boy, man, it took us a minute and a half where we had to shut it off because of the inappropriateness of the videos. It's not just the sex appeal was just too much. It was just really kind of gaudy. And so the high-waisted bikini vibe that they were going with in the 80s, the kind of leotard bikini, you can handle that. But it was David Lee Roth himself in those videos, the way he looked, the way he dressed, the way he pantomimed, everything in between. And it wasn't just me. It was a room of adults. His uncle's over and cousins and everyone was there and we were all watching together and we couldn't believe it. We were laughing hysterically at how inappropriate it was. I can only think what Miles thought about the whole thing. 630 says, I saw David Lee Roth a solo show in Naperville at Ribfest a few years ago. He was simulating self-pleasure with a Jack Daniels bottle. The soccer moms gasping, it sucked the air out of the entire festival. He ruined the festival with his inappropriateness. Now, that being said, I got a great test here, or a great text, and I want to find it because I lost it here. 263 says it. Rock and roll is supposed to be inappropriate. That's the whole point, guys. David Lee Roth and Van Halen, yeah, maybe they were over the line, but over the line is what you were buying. That's what they were selling. And if it wasn't Van Halen, then it was somebody else. But the idea that they're always pushing boundaries, which I think is great, and I totally agree with it. I just push back a little bit on that sentiment because we seem to pick and choose what rock and roll is. Rock and roll culture encompasses all. Rock and roll music is usually white guys in spandex. And my point being that you saw in the Super Bowl halftime show rock and roll culture. You saw Shakira and J-Lo pushing back against the norms, trying new boundaries, but at the same time not letting you determine who they were and what they were going to do and what they're going to wear. Okay, then that's rock and roll culture. I'm with you, 773. That's it. You nailed it. But for some reason, these women are not afforded the luxury of rock and roll being inappropriate. Maybe because it's a Super Bowl halftime show. Maybe because they're not playing rock music. I don't know. But they're similar. And I guess the thing I had a problem with is looking back at the David Lee Roth and Van Halen videos of the 80s, which are wholly inappropriate, even for my seasoned 45-year-old eyes. It's just surprising to me of how our culture ebbs and flows to the point of 2020 that the same things that they were doing on stage at the Super Bowl halftime show, they were doing in David Lee Roth videos in 1983. We don't seem to have any problem with what was happening in there, but we have all sorts of problems what was happening on stage. Now, maybe I get it, this concept that it was at that and billions of people, a lot of those people may not have been tuning in for the rock and roll experience, for that culture, that boundary defining inappropriate culture. I get that. But just interesting dichotomy and a little bit of balance to think about what we thought was okay in 1984. I mean, 1984, the record, was probably one of the most successful records of all time. 406 says, love to see Heart perform live. Yeah. Heart would be one, right? I would think Heart. Maybe talking about what shows you would forego or you would fork over the ticket fees, from Ticketmaster. Heart would be a good one. That's a great one. Thanks, 406, on that one. 412 says, no wonder your son won't eat vegetables. He's too much Van Halen, I guess. I don't know about that. 312 says, Santana was the opening band for Eric Clapton at the old Chicago Stadium. Carlos and Eric jammed at the end of the show, completely insane. Eric Clapton would show up, I think, on a lot of people's lists, right? I'd be down with that. I saw the reunion show that's coming to Chicago this summer as well. We haven't talked about. We talked about the Backstreet Boys. We talked about the amazing Cruel World tour with Morrissey and every English alt band of the 80s and 90s. And we talked about, of course, what started as Rage Against the Machine. One that has not been mentioned is Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson is coming to Chicago this summer. Announced a reunion tour herself. Tickets are, I'm not sure if they're on sale yet, but I'm sure they'll be sold out quick. That would be one. Would you go to a Janet Jackson concert? I would have to really think about that. Because I always pick, I'm not a huge music fan. I love music like anybody else, but I don't know if I'm that much of a loyalist that there's one band and I'm going to go see one band. I know all their music, right? But Janet Jackson, it'd be hard pressed to not know the song she was playing. You'd go to a Janet Jackson show and it would be all the songs that were played on the radio when I was in high school, right? And anything into the 90s and 2000s. And I would assume she'd have enough radio hits, if you will, from Rhythm Nation, Pleasure Principle, to all the That's the Way Love Goes, that she could fulfill a two-hour show with just hits. That's what I'm looking for, right? If I'm going to pay the money, like we were talking about with Madonna when she came through, if I'm going to pay the money, if she's going to her B-sides or the new stuff, uh-uh. If I'm forking out $250, I want to see the I want to see the Rhythm Nation dancers. I want to see the countdown. 3, 4, 2, 1. Huh. I would definitely go see that. 773 said, I'd pay big money for all five Floyd, Pink Floyd members to play even one more song again. R.I.P. Barrett and Waters. Yeah. Kiss, 1978, 630 says. Love Gun Tour at Chicago Stadium. God bless my grandfather for taking us. That's great. Grandpa, where are we going? We're going to the stadium to see Kiss. Get your face paint on. I love that. Yeah, I think that would be, it'd have to be a band to get me to go to one of these. And maybe this summer is it. There's a lot of great nostalgia coming through. The Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Poison one feels like every song that they would play, you would know. Not saying that that necessarily is a good thing, that I'd be a fan of every song, but I would assume if you went to Def Leppard, Motley Crue, and Poison, it would be 4 hours of songs you could sing along to. Maybe, you know, and I understand it's all about what your taste is. You may not have been a fan of those bands, but they're those bands at a certain time and certain place for my generation, being 45 years old, you knew every song because they played it like crazy on MTV. They played it on the radio. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing Unskinny Bop or Pour Some Sugar on Me. Dumb songs like that. They're so dumb. Pour Some Sugar on Me is one of the most successful songs in rock music history and also the dumbest song of all time. I told you I kind of get into karaoke at home, have fun with the family on a Saturday night, and that's a very entertaining way to do it. You just go to YouTube. It really is for anybody who has Comcast or I would assume any sort of talk remote. I think Amazon Fire Stick does this too. That's the wave of the future where you just kind of go beep, beep, and you go, can you give me, you do try different accents and inflections and try and, you know, say Netflix, see if it'll get you, but it always does. But I will, you can just go to YouTube on your TV, at least I can through Xfinity, and I say, you know, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Def Leppard, karaoke on YouTube, and it pulls up the karaoke YouTube, and you go right into it, turn it up. You got the peaches, I got the cream. What? It is the dumbest song of all time. I will argue to the days long how dumb that song is. Because you remember it as a kid being like, oh my gosh, this is such a rock song. It was the number one song for a whole summer. If you look back at chart toppers, I'll bet you it holds records for capturing an 8-year span of generation. From kids who were from 20 years old to 10, singing along with it in the summer of 1987 or whatever it was. When you listen to the lyrics of that song, you're like, "What? How brain dead was I to the dumbest song that has ever been written in life?" It's like, because I'm going to look them up. I'm going to take a break and I'm going to read them to you like a poem. That's what we'll do. So we'll do some poetry. Here, Justin Kaufman, 720 WGN. Stay with us. I think we stumbled on something as people are texting in their favorite dumb songs for me to slam poet eyes. 312-981-7200. Some pretty dumb songs that we bought into as generations. We're just talking about Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me. Before we get to that, the concert of the summer, says 815, is Sammy Hagar with Whitesnake and Night Ranger. Night Ranger. Did Night Ranger "Don't Tell Me You Love Me"? And Whitesnake, of course. I'm only going to see that show if they put a car on the stage and Tawny Katane has to recreate the Whitesnake "Here I Go Again" video in its entirety. I don't want a montage, or it's got to be, can't be a medley. Lou Reed. I saw Lou Reed in a strip mall storefront in Arlington Heights in 1984. It'd be tough to bring Lou Reed back, but 847 or 678 says, "I'm 44. I absolutely love that song. Pour Some Sugar on Me." Yes, I'm with you. That song, "Pour Some Sugar on Me," was probably the biggest song in many of our lives. It was a coming-of-age song. If you're 44 and I'm 45, it was a coming-of-age where we first started to get into music and social lives and being 14 or whatever it might be. It's right around that time. Ripped jeans, learning to roll the jeans at the ankle, long mullets, the Union Jack flag shirt, come on, jean jackets, all of it inspired by this amazingly dumb song. I did this song for karaoke not too long ago, and I'm going to read it to you. This is Def Leppard's "Pour Some Sugar on Me" lyrics. It starts with the strange choice by one of the, by, I think it's Mutt Lange who does this record, but this is one of the best songs production-wise of all time. But it starts with the weird Joe Elliott thing where he goes, "Step inside, walk this way, you and me, babe, hey, hey." Okay. Then the music starts up, good riff. "Love is like a bomb, baby. Come on, get it on. Living like a lover with a radar phone. Looking like a tramp, like a video vamp. Demolition woman, can I be your man?" Doesn't make sense. "Razzle and a dazzle and a flash of little light. Television lover, baby, go all night. Sometime, anytime, sugar me sweet. Little miss of innocent, sugar me." Yeah. Yeah. Again. It goes into the chorus, which is, "So come on, take a bottle and shake it up. Break the bubble, break it up. Pour some sugar on me in the name of love. Pour some sugar on me. Come on, fire me up. Pour your sugar on me. I can't get enough. I'm hot, sticky sweet, from my head to my feet." That comes right from Joe Elliott sitting in a trailer, like, "Sticky sweet, sweet, sweet. What rhymes with sweet? What would it be? Neat? Beat? Beat? Feet. From my head to my feet." Well, that's not really a saying. It's head to your toes. Now we'll go with feet. Six Three Ogres, where's the bongos? Snapping fingers, right? That is the first verse of one of the biggest songs in the history of music that we all grew up with. And it is the dumbest song I've ever heard. Listen. Verse 2. "Red light, yellow light, green light, go. Crazy little woman in a one-man show. Mirror queen, mannequin, rhythm of love. Sweet dream, saccharine, loosen up. Loosen up." Again. Doesn't make any sense. "You gotta squeeze a little, tease a little more. Easy operator, come a knocking on my door. Sometime, anytime, sugar me sweet. Little miss of innocent, sugar me." Wow. That is one of the dumbest songs I've ever heard. 630 said, I got another one for you. The dumbest songs of all time tonight on 720 WGN. Kind of a Valentine's Day theme. The dumbest love songs of all time. Pour Some Sugar on Me is supposed to be sexy, I guess. It's the idea of everyone just thinks it is. Maybe everyone thought it was a little risque, so we just thought it was awesome that our parents were letting us listen to a song that was telling us to pour sugar on ourselves. It's terrible. It's a great song. Dumb lyrics. 630 says, how about Rock You Like a Hurricane by Scorpions? This is the dumbest song ever. What is even happening? I'll just leave this one here. I feel like this is more R-rated. It's early morning. The sun comes out. Last night was shaking and it was pretty loud. My cat is purring. It scratches my skin. So what's wrong with another sin? What? This, here I am. Rock You Like a Hurricane. This could be the dumbest song. This is definitely a runner-up to the dumbest song of all time. 630 says, this is a viral bit. We should do this as a video, right? It's going to be a viral video, the dumbest songs of all time. Just in time. 815 says, you're missing the point. The music makes the lyrics rock. Def Leppard rocks. Great band. I'm a 57-year-old retired firefighter in Joliet. Hey, I'm with you. I saw Def Leppard. That's the one group. I saw them at the UIC Pavilion not too long ago. I love Def Leppard. We had the guitar player on. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Phil, right? The shirtless one. he's always shirtless. He came on the show with us when he's coming through town one time for the summer. It was awesome to talk to him about Def Leppard stories. Look it up. It's great. We've kind of moved to lyrics, the dumbest songs of all time, as we are creating a new viral sensation. Slam poets, giving it the poetry vibe. 815 says, you should do Chicago Saturday in the Park. Gives me a headache every time. It does. Why? Saturday in the Park. Saturday in the Park. I think it was the 4th of July. Saturday in the Park. I think it was the 4th of July. People dancing. People laughing. A man selling ice cream. Singing Italian songs. Everybody is another. Can you dig it? Yes, I can. And I've been waiting such a long time for Saturday. That's a ridiculous. Oh, I think we're on to something. Everyone is now throwing out suggestions. Let's try this one. So this would be Love Stinks by the Jay Giles Band. Love Stinks. You love her, but she loves him, and he loves somebody else. You just can't win. And so it goes till the day you die. This thing they call love, it's gonna make you cry. I've had the blues, the reds and the pinks, and one thing's for sure. Love Stinks. That's so dumb. Second is the worst. Two by two and side by side, love's going to find you. Yes, it is. You just can't hide. You'll hear it call. Your heart will fail. Then love will fly. It's going to soar. I don't care for any Casanova thing. All I can say is, love stinks. That doesn't even rhyme. I'm loving that you guys are loving it. You keep giving me suggestions, and they're all working out for the dumbest songs on Valentine's Day. They all seem to be a part of the classic rock genre, not known for their songwriting necessarily. There are some great collections. One band that didn't get mentioned tonight, Fleetwood Mac. Obviously, can't do the full... I guess he could... No, one of... Who's... Somebody's passed away in that band. Maybe not. It'd be great to get Fleetwood Mac back together. How about Hot Blooded by Foreigner? One of my favorites when I was 7. Hot Blooded. Check it and see. I've got a fever of 103. Come on, baby. Do more than dance? Okay, I can see where this Foreigner ditty was written. Come on, baby. Do you do more than dance? You don't have to read my mind to know what I have in mind. Honey, you ought to know. Now you move so fine. Let me lay it on the line. I want to know what you're doing after the show. Creepy. Now it's up to you. We can make a secret rendezvous. Just me and you. I'll show you loving like you never knew. That's why I'm hot-blooded. It's a good hook. Everyone knows the hot-blooded. I didn't realize he was at a strip club. Nobody ever listens to the lyrics of these songs, right? It's ridiculous. Having fun tonight. Text in. We'll do the dumbest songs of all time done by poetry to let you know how dumb they really are. Inspired by Pour Some Sugar on Me. Maybe the dumbest song of all time. It's a Valentine's Day edition of the dumbest songs of all time. Just reading the lyrics. Of course, you put the music to it. It rocks. It's something different. But in this case, you just pull out the lyrics and boy, they are dumb. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here, get Vic Vaughn's news. We'll come back tonight. Snap36 is going to join us too. Talk about reinventing online markets with better photography. It seems so simple. That's all coming up here. Justin Kaufman, 720 WGN. Vic Vaughn's news is next. So stay with us. 312-981-7200. It's Valentine's Day. It's Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Buzz Kilman takes over at 11. He's in for Dave Plyer tonight. Buzz Kilman, one of Chicago radio's greats, will be in tonight at 11 o'clock here on 720 WGN. How about that? Very excited to hear that. Buzz Kilman. We're talking about Valentine's Day. We're talking about love songs and the dumbest songs of all time. Not necessarily the dumbest songs, because then you get into the Right Said Freds and the dumb one-hit wonders. That's not what I mean. I mean the dumbest lyrics of all time. This got started because of Def Leppard. Someone had talked about Def Leppard and the reunion shows this summer. That's what we were talking about. And we got to thinking about how big you're going to know Def Leppard songs if you go see Def Leppard, like Pour Some Sugar on Me. And of course, I had the good fortune of thinking of that song and saying, oh, I want to do karaoke of that one. And doing it in my living room one Saturday night, the family, and realizing how absolutely dumb those lyrics are. No doubt about it. A perfect 10 of dumbness. And here on Valentine's Day, we thought we would do a quick segment just about the dumbest lyrics of love songs. And it doesn't necessarily have to be love songs. I mean, but you're definitely buying this and you're loving it because I've been giving it the poetry treatment. Like, for instance, this great ditty. 816 said, represent for the ladies. Hit me with your best shot. It's from Doc from KC, Kansas City. Hit me with your best shot by Pat Benatar. You would not think that song, because that song's iconic. What a great riff, right? Hit me with your best shot. Well, you're a real tough cookie with a long history. of breaking little hearts like the one in me? That's okay. Let's see how you do it. Put up your dukes. Let's get down to it. Hit me with your best shot. Why don't you hit me with your best shot? Hit me with your best shot. Fire away. This is a ridiculous song, by the way. It's hard because obviously Pat Benatar, she's an amazing singer, and the hooks are great. Hit me with your best shot. But when you read them like a slam poet, it's not very deep. I think that's what we're going for here. One of the classics, Captain and Tennille. Who doesn't love a Captain and Tennille song on Valentine's Day? Well, the lyrics to Muskrat Love. Muskrat, candlelight, doing the town and doing it right. In the evening, it's pretty pleasing. Muskrat Susie, Muskrat Sam, do the jitterbug out in Muskrat Land. And they shimmy. Sam is so skinny. And they whirl and they twirl and they tango, singing a jingo and a jango, floating like the heavens above. It looks like Muskrat Love. Wow, that's just gibberish. Not necessarily your best jam. One of the classics. I guess the song is called Wannabe. I never knew the name of the song was Wannabe. But it is by the classic girl group of the 90s, Spice Girls. If you really want this one, this would be how it would go poetry-wise. Ha ha ha, ha ha ha. That's how it starts. Ha ha ha, ha ha ha. They're laughing. Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I want a ha. I want a ha. I want a ha. I want a ha. I want a really, really, really want a ziggy, ziggy, za. Ziggy, ah. If you want my future, you better forget my past. If you want to get with me, you better make it fast. Now don't go wasting my precious time. Get your act together and we could be just fine. And it goes right back into, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. No, you tell you what you want, what you really, really want. That's a bad one. Lines have lit up. Sometimes you do, you know, really thoughtful conversation, talking about immigration earlier, maybe trends in retail. Talking about selling tickets on the secondary market, all the important things in life. But to get the dumb lyrics, boy. All right. I'll load up a couple more. We'll go to 10:30 on this. I'll load up a couple more. We'll take a break and we'll continue here. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It is WGN Radio at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It is Valentine's Day night, and we thought at the beginning of this program that we would have, this is a sweet saccharine kind of, you know, show that would just be all about love stories. And we've ended up on the dumbest lyrics of love songs of all time. And I'm not mad. I love it. It's so good. You have submitted requests for slam poetry of the dumbest lyrics of love songs that are out there. Now, a lot of these songs are, I don't know if you put Pat Benatar's Hit Me With Your Best Shot in love song territory, but I guess you would. Definitely the Spice Girls. But it's not just, it's amazing because this all started because organically we're talking about one of the dumbest songs of all time, Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me, and we read the lyrics as a slam poet would. And now the text line has lit up to the point where I can't keep up. I have queued up. I just spent that entire break I felt like I was in an action movie trying to crack a code. Oh, God, we're running out of time. I got to find all these lyrics. So we're trying to wing it here, but we got some songs lined up. This is our Valentine's Day edition of the dumbest lyrics of all time. And we're having fun. Melanie says, cannot contain my laughter. Apologize to the neighbors. You are a perfect poet for sleazy, dumb lyrics. Thank you. 312 says, what a great fun segment. I'm laughing out loud. Thanks for the smiles. Yeah, so you know what? That's what Valentine's Day is about, smiles, right? All right, let's get back into some of these songs. This, I'm not even sure. Let's go to this one. This is a classic. This is Rupert Holmes' Escape, better known as the Pina Colada song, which people know very well. I was tired of my lady. We'd been together too long. Like a worn-out recording of a favorite song. So while she lay there sleeping, I read the paper in bed. And in the personals column, there was this letter that I read. So far, so good. If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain, if you're not into yoga, if you have half a brain, if you like making love at midnight in the dunes of the Cape, okay, I'm the love that you've looked for. Write to me and escape. I didn't know the Dunes of the Cape line of that one. It continues for like 14 minutes. We all know this is a dumb song. Someone said, how about Sinatra? Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Were Made for Walking, which I would think on the top was clever, right? That's clever. Pete said, no, don't do that one. Do a different one. How about Under My Thumb by the Rolling Stones? I would never think Under My Thumb would be a tough one, but I guess this is a dumb song. Under My Thumb, the girl who once had me down. Under My Thumb, the girl who once pushed me around. It's down to me, the difference in the clothes she wears. Down to me, the change has come. She's under my thumb. That sounds like pretty dumb. Pretty dumb lyrics. He's hard to say, you know, because Mick Jagger gets away with a lot. And I would think that you give them, again, a lot of these times you're just talking about lyrics that are stupid, but when you put the lick, you put the hook on it, everything in between, it turns out to be a great song. But most of the time, when you just pull out the lyrics, it's ridiculous. All right, let's keep going. 705 says, anything by Spinal Tap. We get a lot of Spinal Tap. 312 says, chiming in on the risky videos from back in the day. That's kind of started this as well. We were talking about the Van Halen videos. Robert Palmer, Addicted to Love. Yeah, that was a, I can't remember that one. That was the one with the kind of girls playing guitar. What's wrong with that? I don't understand what that. All right, 312-981-7200. How about this one? I think this is the brand new roller skate song. Remember that one? I don't remember the name of it. I think it pops up a Catherine McPhee song, which is called Brand New Key. So let's try it. Again, dumbest lyrics of some of your favorite love songs. I rode my bicycle past your window last night. I roller skated to your door at daylight. It almost seems like you're avoiding me. I'm okay alone, but you've got something I need. Well, I've got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new key. I think that we should be together and try them on to see. And Staying with the brand new key in the roller skates. Are they locked? They in a locker? Is that an old 70s thing where roller skates would be locked? You have a little key that you'd have in your purse? Pull them out and, oh, yeah, like handcuffs? I ride my bike, I roller skate. Don't drive no car. Don't go so fast, but I go pretty far. For someone who don't drive, I've been all around the world. Some people say I've done all right for a girl. What? What does that mean? Who says that? Is that really something someone said? You know what? I think you do all right for a girl. Maybe this is a classic 70s jam. Ridiculous. It should be the, that's what 630 says. You should do the Me Too movement, sexist lyrics, poetry jam. And feel like, yeah, you're right. That would be the way to go. Then the last one I'll do here is a classic. I don't consider this a love song. But this is a really great song that everybody knows, and they performed it for the Hall of Fame. This is the first legitimate crossover. Rock and roll rap crossover. Mashup. Although it was a rock song first before they mashed it up. Walk This Way, of course, by Aerosmith. Backstroke lover. Always hiding neath the covers. Till I talk to your daddy, he say. He said you ain't seen nothing. Till you're down on a muffin. Then you're sure to be changing your ways. Then we'll keep it there. Then it starts to get into stuff where you're like, all right, what is this song about? This song, reading the lyrics on this song that I'm going to stop on, is, as 630 said, maybe a better segment, the calling out some of the dumber lyrics, not just for being dumb and not making sense, but being completely ridiculous and how this band and this song continues to get played over and over and over. Not just played, but performed. Even at the Super Bowl. I'm not going to go into some of the lyrics that are next because it's essentially like, she's young, so I should get with her. That's essentially it, right? It's kind of ridiculous, Steven Tyler. Come on. But it does fit. 630 says, best bit ever. 224 says, you obviously don't know roller skates. It's called a key. You used to tighten your skates so they'd fit better with the key. Oh, I got a pair of brand new roller skates. They don't fit. You got a brand new key. I need it so we can tighten these roller skates up. Why don't you say that? There's a lot of roller skating aficionados out in our listening audience, Pete. After I made that point, it was very obvious that I did not know what I was talking about because there were about 8 or 10 texts that jumped in right away to be like, here, see what happens with a key. You know, when you're roller skating, what happens is you have this key, it can tighten the roller skates. Justin, you just don't know. I'm like, yeah, I missed the roller skating culture. I missed the roller skating days of yore. 224 is like, you see, they were adjustable. Yeah, I got it. Figured it out. All right, coming up. We'll stop the bit. We stopped a bit. Good bit. We'll do it every week. It'll be our Friday night thing. Dumb lyrics. Coming up, we're doing a download on Chicago business, and we're going to talk to the CEO of Snap36, which is a company that is revolutionizing photography, 360-degree photography, for you, the consumer, to online shop. And it's a great idea, and it's a business right here in Chicago. That's coming up next here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is the Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. This is a segment where we talk to Chicago entrepreneurs to get their stories so we can better understand ours. Today, Jeff Hunt is in studio. He's the CEO and founder of Snap36, revolutionizing the way we look at content, literally. Jeff, great to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me today.
So Snap 36, give us the snapshot, if you will.
Sure.
I'm really getting into puns already to
start
this.
Yeah, you know
thing.
What? I've got my old dad jokes, too, so I get it.
Good.
So, you know, the Snap 36 thing, it's interesting. I spent 30 years in technology. The last 10 I was with a company got bought by Adobe. So we were like engaging with technology and retailers and distributors that were selling online. And what's interesting is everybody kept saying, well, what about 360 photography? I'd really like to try and do that online. And nobody was doing it. So stuck in my head, because I'm not that smart of a guy to build software, but I knew that there might be a white space out there in the content world if you could figure it out. And fast forward, we got bought out by Adobe. I was running Europe. I was in Wiesbaden, Germany, and stumbled across some technology that automated the whole process. And I'm like, huh.
This is it. It's an amazing thought, because this is really for people who want to showcase their product in a better way online, because we as consumers have evolved. We've evolved to what we expect to understand and learn from the Amazons or the Walmarts or the any sort of website that we're purchasing from. We want all the information, and that would be the same with photography.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about evolution, because photography was invented 193 years ago. And for some crazy reason, until even today, people think that images should be flat.
Right.
Because if you invented photography today and you said, here, put my product online, and you gave somebody a flat picture, they go, wait, what about the rest of it?
Right. That's exactly right.
I mean, there is no limitation of the third dimension on your device or on your desktop these days. So why should we have to pay the penalty for it?
It seems like you would think 360 photography would be something of the future, but you're absolutely right. In the way that the web is working today, it's here. And it's surprising to me to even look at, just quickly before this interview, kind of looking at different pages and trying to understand how it's used, how many people don't use it. The fact that we're still in this flat picture world where I don't know what's on the backside of the product that I'm buying. If I'm buying a shirt, I hope it looks the same as it does in the front than it does in the back.
Yep, absolutely. It amazes me, too. I started the company 12 years ago, and you know, they always say you overestimate what you can do in 3 years and underestimate what it'll do in seven, and I think Bill Gates said 1 in 10. But either way, it's taken a little longer to adopt than I've thought, but what's happening now is you're starting to see the likes of Amazon and Walmart and Grainger and Lowe's and Home Depot, and all of these major retailers are now adopting 360. And the beauty of it is they don't do it because it looks cool.
Right.
They do it because it moves the financial needle.
That's what you have to convince the people who want to use your company, Snap 36, is how it gets from obviously spending the money to do 360 photography to the bottom line, to getting people to reach in. So how do you do that? Is it just as simple as saying people can understand your product better?
You know, it depends. If you're coming at it from the brand side, it's one thing. People love to show their products, you know, in 360. And the beauty of that is they know that they're going to get higher conversion rates and lower returns. Lower returns is huge in this, because you now get what you see. Or what you see is what you get. And so we're also finding in this day of, you know, uncertainty and non-trust in the world and fake news and whatnot out there, that people really want to feel a sense of trust and credibility in products they're buying. And it's incredible how when people view a 360 image on a website, the light goes off, their brain goes into overdrive, and they'll hit the purchase button, you know, 50% more than they do with a static image.
It totally makes sense for the fact that you want to know more about the product that you're buying. Jeff Hunt is here. He is the CEO and founder of Snap 36. He's my guest tonight on the Download in Chicago Business. The challenges has always been the technology. And as you stumbled across this in Europe, how much is that still a challenge? Are you seeing, since the 12 years you've been in business, the evolution of just the technology that goes with this product?
Yeah. So there are two sides of that equation. The one side is you have to have the retailers to have the technology on their website so they can accept it. You know, think 360 images aren't that much magic. Like when you were a kid and you'd do the little flip things in your books and figures would run across the bottom of your books. That's really all you're really doing. You're tricking the brain into thinking you got a 360 viewed image. You really just have 72 JPEGs on three levels, 24 around three levels, stitched together. So the retailers, distributors have very inexpensive and good software that they can now put on their website to handle the 360s. There's a challenge on the back end of access to the merchandise, getting it shipped in, shooting it at scale. Back in, 15, 20 years ago, you might have seen in a flash drive, us car spinning.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have been done by an agency that they spent $30,000, $50,000 on to create that. You're not going to spend $1,000 to spin a shoe. You know, you've got to get the price of it down to a commodity, you know, $100 or under, where now it's competitive with static photography before people are actually going to.
And how do you do that for, you know, the fact that this technology is still pretty unique and you have it? So how do you do that to make sure that the price stay low and you're still making money?
That's the secret sauce.
That's the secret sauce.
It's a secret. It's not such a secret. Yeah, right. It's just kind of hard work and a lot of trial and error. It's interesting because you have two converging workflows that have to work together. One, the physical product, which is just a logistics problem. I got docks in my studio. Trucks pull up and they unload all this stuff, everything from shoes or microchips the size of a speck of dust all the way to a 4,000-pound transformer from Siemens or Schneider or someone like that. So we have to manage that inventory and that physical product and then get it to a station, shoot it, and then you start a whole new workflow of digital where sometimes you've got to do retouching, knock out the background, do these kind of things, and to make sure it's of the quality you want to deliver it to your customer. So you've got all of these things going on, and it's really where logistics, technology, art, and a little bit of luck all come together to allow us to get to the scale.
I was going
to
say, that sounds like a challenge, and I always ask anyone sitting in that chair about the challenges of the business. Is that the number one, is just trying to perfect that workflow?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, educating the market was, and now that you've got, again, the likes of Amazon and Walmart that are actually validating that the market's here, that's been the big challenge all along. Now it's on an execution level. You know, we've got to get to a point where we're working like an Amazon warehouse, you know, cranking merchandise through and cranking, you know, digital bits out the other end of digital images.
Jeff Hunt's my guest. He is the CEO and founder of Snap36, which provides 360-degree photography for any business who wants to photograph their content. And that's really the rage right now because, like we just mentioned, these retailers, the big ones, that's what the customers want from those retailers. You want to go and see a shirt that you want to buy on Amazon. You want to be able to see the whole shirt. I keep using shirt, but it could be any product, but you want to see more than just the flat images that are in front of you. The world will adjust to this because it is coming, and you're seeing more and more of these products being shot this way. And you probably notice as well, 12 years in the business, that more and more clients are lining up. Are you ready for a world that says, we want this and we want this now?
We are, because we don't need that big of a piece of the pie. When you think about it, Amazon has 550 million products on their site.
Hmm.
We're not going to shoot those tomorrow or probably in my lifetime because I'm an old guy. But the fact of the matter is that I agree. It's going to start becoming table stakes. Like you've taught yourself that if you can't zoom on a product and see it on a website, you don't necessarily trust it. It will get to be the table stakes. You know, we believe in all ships rise in a rising tide.
Mm-hmm.
And so our business model is threefold. We've got 42,000 square feet studio over at Lake in Ashland. But we'll also take the studio into a warehouse. And so you take the logistics out of the equation there.
That's got to be huge for someone who's got a big product they want to sell.
Well, big products as well as lots of products. We've gone in, we've shot everything from 400 refrigerators, for Frigidaire all the way to 61,000 products for Heritage Parts, who's replacement parts for restaurants and commercial kitchens. And again, they even have a whole different value prop, because their whole thing is, nobody browses for a replacement wheel for your dishwasher. It's just not that fun. So,
true.
But when you need the right part at the right time,
be huge.
You're holding it in your hand, and you're like, wait a minute, is this or is this not the right part?
Yes.
And if you can turn it around and all of a sudden there's that serial number, there's that mounting hole, just like the one in your hand, boom, 100% sure.
I could do that with light bulbs. You do that with light bulbs for me, I'm guaranteed customer for life.
Seriously.
Can't tell you how many times I go in there trying to screw, I'm like, I don't know if this is the right one, that kind of thing, got to bring it with you.
Yep.
I had a photo that could show me exactly what I needed. It'd be so easy.
We've actually got a customer down in Texas called 1,000 Bulbs. So,
okay, so that brings up to my last question about why Chicago, because this is a national and international idea. What is it about being at Lake and Ashland? What is it about doing business in Chicago that keeps you here?
I live here. to be honest, way back in my tech career, I looked at going to Boston or going to San Francisco or Austin or a lot of the high tech places back in the day. Flip Filipowski was still rolling around in these parts when I moved up here. But getting into this business, what's interesting about it and what I didn't realize is it is such a distribution hub that anybody I'm talking to, it could be, ABB out of Switzerland, it could be, Sony or Samsung, somewhere around here, it could be Bolingbrook, it could be Rosemont, it could be somewhere, they got a warehouse full of
interesting
stuff.
Interesting, yeah. Because it's a major city and because of the transportation options here.
Transportation gives us access to the products probably as great as anywhere. We see Dallas, Southern California is kind of there. Denver does a little bit. East Coast, Philly area. But there are pockets of where these massive warehouses are out there handling all this merchandise. And fortunately for us, this happens to be one of them.
Jeff Hunt is the CEO and founder of Snap 36. My guest tonight on the Download Chicago Business, bringing 360-degree photography to the masses when it comes to products that you find on all the retailers. Jeff, it's a pleasure to have you, and thanks for being my guest.
Great. Appreciate your time.
Interesting conversation with Snap 36 about the future of retail. It's not retail, but online retail. It's so true. Photography is not caught up with all the other technological advances that are afforded to you as a customer online. It's funny to think that you the security has, the web page has, the ability to search and parse, but you always end up at the same place going, is that just the front of the shirt? Can I see the back? I'm sure the back's fine. You order it, you get it, and you're like, nah. I didn't know it had writing on the back. I didn't know it said Thug Life. Then you got to take it back. I think that's the way of the future. I think every item that is offered on Amazon or Walmart or any of the places that you get your fine products should have a video. And the video, I don't want anyone talking in it. I just want the video to be someone using the product. And I want it to be local actors from the community theater. So I want it to be kind of like pantomime, like they're doing something. I'm late for work, need to put this shirt on. They put it on like something that would be how you would use the shirt. That's what I want. So I could press play and I could just watch this person go, so busy, need to put on my shirt. Then they put on the shirt and you're like, all right, that looks good. I want that with every product. I think we should go past Snap 36 is good, and they're definitely doing the work of the future, but if they're taking pitches, I might want to get in on that. I just think that it could save, it really could do two things. One, it's useful to you because you're like, all right, I saw the product in action. I'm going to mix this bowl, and two, it gives community theater actors a job. You can't get really good actors You don't want anyone who's maybe unionized, who has got credits, because they're going to do it too good, right? You need to get the Christopher Guest type Waiting for Guffman actors who are going to put a lot of energy into it. They're going to put very earnest about it. You're going to buy a toy. The video is them playing with the toy. But maybe in their head, their motivation is, I'm 12. I don't know what to do with this toy. Coming up next, Buzz Kilman. Buzz Kilman is in for Dave Plyer tonight on 720 WGN. How fun is that? One of the great Chicago iconic radio guys in coming up in just a couple minutes, right after Vic's news at the top of the hour. Great to, I just met Buzz in the hallway. It's awesome. It's a, feel like a dream come true to meet some of the people that you listen to in Chicago, get a chance to grow up with. It's always awesome. It's always great when you get that opportunity. 312-981-7200. Show him some love tonight. We'll be back on Monday. Coming up on Monday, we'll do the Chicago Accent Challenge. We skipped last week. I forgot what we even got on a rant on. We had some great segment on Monday, and we blew right through the Chicago Accent Challenge. So the season two of the Chicago Accent Challenge has started. And this is a great bit. It's not even a bit. It's a real thing. Last year we had a linguist in Ted McClellan. He came in, he wrote the book, How to Speak Midwestern, and he told us all about one great segment, 20-25 minutes, where we talked about just where accents come from. He talked about the Wisconsin accent, talked about Missouri, talked about Iowa, and he told us that the people who live in the northern, or the, I guess it would be the northwestern part of New York State, Buffalo, Rochester, those places, they have the Chicago accent. It's the same accent because it was the same migration patterns. It's interesting. I would have never thought that the Buffalo Bills fans are going, come on, the Bears, the Bills. I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. So anyway, we came up with these questions that suss out your Chicago accent. And you know you have it. We all have it. We can play the game. And if you answer the questions and we find that you have the best Chicago accent, you win a prize. And you automatically are entered into the grand prize, which is an on-stage tournament. And we did this last year. We did it up on a theater on the north side. It was great. The great Antoine Walker, the basketball player, he was there. Or he's in the audience. It's like, this is the best. Like the All-Star Weekend a year earlier. But we did it, and it was so much fun. And the crowd came out, and we did it kind of Showtime at the Apollo style. We asked a couple questions. We had some judges, but at the end, the crowd decided who the favorite was. So you can find that on WGNRadio.com because we recorded it. It's so funny to listen back to it. It's so good. The judges, it was Alderman Spisato from the 36th, 38th Ward. I forgot what ward he's in. Ted McClellan, and Scott Goldstein is a great Chicago improviser and raconteur who's been a part of the show. And they asked funny questions. Like the final question was, what's the plot of the movie Running Scared? And Jimbo, who ended up winning it, gave us the plot. It's so great. But it's kind of a mixture of celebration of not just the accent and the vowel sounds, the consonant sounds, but more Chicago trivia as well. That's coming up on Monday. Also, Max Temkin will be here. Max is the owner of Cards Against Humanity, which is a great card game. They, not only they made news last week because they bought the website Clickhole, which is the Onion's video wing. He bought it. They were in danger of being shut down. He's like, I'll buy it. They've had that much success with Cards Against Humanity that he now owns it. But he also opened up a game cafe. And I hesitate because I want to say board game cafe, but it's much more than that. It's a restaurant. It's got a great chef, but it also has all sorts of board games at the level that you would Cards Against Humanity. It also has a lot of like kind of more experiential stuff, and it's got escape rooms. This is the future, and he opened up this shop just this week. I think it opens up this weekend, coming up soon. But Max will be my guest on Monday to talk about doing that and really bring a one-of-a-kind experience to Chicago. There's a couple of places around the country that have this kind of thing, but this is the wave of the future, and Max and Cards Against Humanity are bringing it to Chicago, I think in Bucktown. So we'll talk with Max Temkin about that on Monday. All right, we'll take a quick break. Coming up, Buzz Kilman. So stay with us.